employers in Lewis County.
Well, God only knows what's going on. Howdy. Here it is, a little bit past the top of the hour, a little bit past 6 o'clock on the East Coast. And God, I hate this computer. Oh, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, you know that. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. I haven't done a cold opening in quite a while. No, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It's also where the Listen Live button is. You can also listen on tablet devices via apps for Android devices or smartphones. We don't really mention Windows phones because, well, why? But apps like TuneIn Radio, we think very highly of. I think very highly of. I know some of you do as well. So those are a really good bet for you should you decide to... listen that way. Golly, I'd love to know where that strange audio was coming from. Now I'll just have to sort through and... Ah, there it is. Okay, so are we safe? Yeah, we're safe. Good, good, good. Because it really is. It's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And, you know, Titanic Tuesday is an examination... Oh, here, let's get this out of the way, too. As is always the case, the Horn's days are numbered. Month to month is how we run this little operation, and we needed to raise $300 last night. We raised $60, and thank you very kindly to the people who did raise it. It's keeping us hanging on the way that we are. But that means that $390 is the goal for tonight as we move toward the end of the week. It is only Tuesday. We've got a fighting chance to finish August. We've got a puncher's chance to finish August in the black. I have rearranged my schedule because it becomes more than apparent that if I'm away from here as long as I had planned on being, and the plan was to go up and spend some time with my friends in their struggle with against the destruction of the Pinocchi Hills before heading down to Madison. I can't do that. If I'm away from the microphone, I'll come back to dead air and dead studio and no way to revive it. So that's where we are. So my plan for being gone all of next week and a significant portion of the following has been significantly rearranged. I'll be here through all next week through, well, I'll leave out of here on Friday and be back on Sunday, then leave for Texas the following Wednesday and be back the following Sunday. So that's the plan now. But we really seriously do need to do some significant fundraising somewhere along the way. And thank you very kindly to both Darlene and to Robert in Australia, because they have put forward. Well, let me just go through the notes. Thank you very kindly, sincerely. Robert writes in and says, "Bob, despite receiving the quarterly electricity bill yesterday, on top of everything else this month, I can manage a $50 challenge. Unfortunately, the Aussie dollar is no longer on parity with the U.S. dollar, so when I send the Horn $50, I have to pay Australian dollars $56 plus fees and charges. So here's the challenge. I'll donate $50, approximately Australian dollars $60, provided other Horn listeners give $250 by the end of the show." That's awesome. Thank you, Robert. And then this from Darlene. "I really hope this helps, Bob. I really hope this helps, Bob. $100 challenge out there." So, taken together, Darlene with 100 and several someones to match that 100, that'll put us at 200. If someone manages to match Robert, if we all manage to match Robert, then that'll actually get us on level ground for where we need to be right now. So, it's inspiring to see that the determination in y'all's attempt to keep this going. And believe you me, it wouldn't be going without it. There would be no horn without you. Plain and simple. So there we go. There is $150 on the table to be matched, hopefully, by $100 for Darlene's challenge, and with Robert's Down Under challenge, $250. I'm not sure. Robert, can we count the two respondents the other night? Because there were two people who specifically responded to your earlier challenge of the month. Let me know. So let's get going. 5 minutes past the hour. This is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, named, of course, for the Titanic intellect of the right wing. And Titanic it is indeed, because, well, I think they've got a... Well, never mind. It is... It's Titanic because they're shipping water. Now then, nothing points up the failings of right-wing attempts at cogitation quite like science. And as such... Well, we've got a Jim Dandy example to work with this evening. What would Titanic Tuesday be, really? What would Titanic Tuesday be without Louis Gohmert? But no, this isn't just a Louis story. This has broader implications. So let us strap in, you know, duct tape, tennis balls, strap in and go to the science, what do you call it? Reasoning? We can't call this reasoning. It's a little too loopy even for, I don't know, babbling. When you get right down to it, Louis Gohmert is all nervous-like. He's worried about the future of the planet. But not like science-y people worry about the future of the planet. It's almost the direct opposite. I don't know how this is legal, but the folks over at the American... The Family Research Council, headed by Tony Perkins. Norman!
Yes, Mother Bates.
The Family Research Council has this hour in bedlam thing that they call Washington Watch. I don't know, Das Watch am Washington or something. What? Or is it D? Oh, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, Tony
Norman
Perkins, he took a vacation, went to the Dominican Republic to chase boys or whatever it is he does. Little boys. Tony Perkins took a vacation, and somehow or another, and like I said, I fully don't understand how this can happen with a sitting congressman and not wind up in ethical hot water, but Louis got the hosting job for Tony Perkins. And it turns out that Louis is worried about the planet. Sit down, strap in, because apparently there aren't enough people on it.
Though there are some that say, hey, we've multiplied enough. Well, it turns out that's not necessarily so. Really interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
One of the challenges we face
Now, before he gets going, and I know, Bob, quit interrupting the clip. I forgot part of the setup. This isn't just Louie losing what thin gray settlings were sloshing around between his ears and passing for brains. He's doing it along with Alan Keyes. So it's like a double dose of your stupiding. We may have to rename Louie Upgrade for a double dose of stupid. So now I will try. I will sincerely try not to interrupt the stupid here.
Though there are some that say, hey, we've multiplied enough. Well, it turns out that's not necessarily so. Really interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
One of the challenges we face is that a lot of people who fancy themselves are elites, right? Because they're the people that made a lot of money, their names are all over the media, and so forth. They have really signed on to an agenda that requires the depopulation of the globe. And in the name of fighting global climatological change, called global warming, except that that's been proven to be totally wrong, they are saying that we've got to cut back the population of the world. Bill Gates gave a famous talk back in 2009 in which he was talking about actually abusing vaccinations, which are supposed to keep people healthy and alive, and saying how this could lead to a 15% reduction in the population of the globe as a way to achieve this result. Ted Turner, the founder of CNN, is known for saying that the total population of 250 to 300 million people, there's another group that says 500 million, would be the ideal for the Earth. And you sit there thinking to yourself, well, how do these people intend to get us from 6 billion, close to where we're at right now, down to 250, 300 million or 750 million by culling the population? They're preaching this doctrine because they actually believe that we're a blight on the face of the planet, we human beings. And we should therefore be put on a path.
I went as some of us are a blight on the face of the planet, Alan Keyes. I'm talking to you, Louis Gohmert, talking to you. You get all this? Like I said, nothing displays the titanic idiocy of the right wing quite like hearing them talk about science. And the thing is, sure. Maybe you're sitting in some enlightened country right now thinking, oh, those poor Americans there. Yeah. Well, guess what? We have the power to screw up the entire planet, no matter the good efforts of other countries. Germany, for instance, just broke its own sustainable energy record again today. And I guess they'll probably break it again two or three times next year and the year after that until they're all sitting around. But, you know, that wind and solar, it don't work. I mean, if it worked, we'd be using it. Right? But it don't. So, as former governor and present senator from the state of West Virginia, Joe Manchin once noted, until we get the energy of the future, we're just going to have to keep on burning the coal and poisoning people and blowing up the mountains and burying the streams and killing everything that lives on them. We're just going to have to keep doing it because we have not yet gotten to where we can use the energy of the future. No. You caught that about the the vaccine part? Yeah? Holy mackerel? And it all starts out with a discussion of the elites. I'd really like, and when they talk about elites, naturally they talked about Bill Gates and Ted Turner. But you know what? I think we qualify too. Now there's a whole bunch of us out here in the Little Horn Family Commune who have a hard time scraping up a couple of nickels to rub together. And we don't live in palatial gated McMansion communities. And we're probably a part of that statistic that I heard yesterday that says that the average age of a car on the American roads today is 11 years. I'm trying to think. The Dodge Durango is 15. Yeah. But we're elites because of what elites, you know, believe. You heard that. A lot of people who fancy themselves elites, right? Because they've made a lot of money. Their names are all over the media and so forth. They've really signed on to an agenda that requires the depopulation of the globe. And in the name of fighting global climatological change called global warming, that's proven to be something that's wrong. Proven by whom? This word, proven. Look, I don't think it means what you think it means. Yeah, see, there's Marty. I'm right there with you, Marty. He says, my car's 15 years... No, what? Yeah, my car is 15, and I need to get the power windows fixed. Well, the urgency... Well, you're in California. Are they screwed up and down or screwed up and up, Marty? One seems to be a greater problem than the down part of it. But yeah, I get it. And thanks, Marty, for jumping in on the challenges. We will we'll go after Darlene's first, and so that means there's $80 to go on Darlene's challenge. Thank you very, very kindly, Marty. And I hope you can get the power windows fixed. But climate change, yeah, that's not real. Jim is struggling with this reality, as we put it forward this evening. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Where do they get their ideas? The last thing needed are more people. Jim, not to be contentious, but we're way past the last thing needed is more people, or are more people. We're way over carrying capacity for the planet. I was telling Ferg the other night, I've got a buddy who has this theory called the winnowing of souls. He says that the soul matter, if you go in for souls and stuff, soul matter is a finite quantity, and there's only so much of it to go around, and the more population there are, the thinner the soul material to go around gets, and we're in an era when there just isn't much of it. And you begin to wonder when you listen to people like Louis Gohmert and Alan Keyes. But do let's check back in, because I was too busy losing my teensy, tiny, itsy, bitsy little mind. Let's go back.
Percent reduction in the population of the globe as a way to achieve this result. Ted Turner, the founder of CNN, is known for saying that the total population of 250 to 300 million people, there's another group that says 500 million, would be the ideal for the Earth. And you sit there thinking to yourself, well, how do these people intend to get us from 6 billion, we're close to where they are right now, down to 250, 300 million, or 750 million, by culling the population. They're preaching this doctrine because they actually believe that we're a blight on the face of the planet, we human beings. And we should therefore be put on a path toward our own semi-extinction. And I often try to get people to see that if you think about it, if we actually got back to the levels they're talking about, it would just be these elitists and the people needed to service
that's
them.
Right.
That's all that would be left in the world.
That's a scary thought.
Thanks very much to our friends at Right Wing Watch for capturing yet another great moment in wing nuttery. There's going to be nothing left but the elites, basically Ted Turner and Bill Gates, if we are to understand Alan Keyes correctly, and the other 498,999,998. See what happens with me and math on the fly? We're all just gonna spend all of our time servicing the elite that is Ted Turner and Bill Gates, who are apparently going to become Methuselahs along the lines of something out of Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon, a book for which I will forever be indebted to our buddy Reverbo. For having turned me on to preposition problems. But that's not where it ends. Oh, no. No, no, no. Oh, thanks, Kate. Thank you very much, Kate. So Kate has now taken us down to $60 to go to meet Darlene's challenge. The urgency is real. The need is great. And the thanks are huge. Thank you. Ron and Raleigh writing in, let's start a pool. Hey, Bob. My daily driver is 24 years old this month. Any older? Anybody got an older car out there than Ron's 24-year-old beater? And P.S., tell Marty to check the fuse first. Mine were stuck down. It was the fuse. And it really does suck when they're stuck in the down position, because then there's duct tape and garbage bags involved, and it really limits your ability to see what's going on. Right. Things just falling down all over the place. So there's that. Remember, Titanic Tuesday and the Titanic intellects of the right wing. Which means that we can go north from Texas to Oklahoma Stan. And Tom Coburn. But not yet. Because, see, there really is... I mean, while Louis Gohmert's out there saying there aren't enough people on the planet, and asserting that, what was this? Vaccines will be used to cull the population. If you would care to explain that, shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Explain what that means. Vaccines will be used to cull the population. Does that mean the vaccines are actually going to kill people, or that they will be withheld and people will therefore die? I'm guessing, since it's Louis Gohmert, who's, of course, friends with 1L Michelle Bachmann, who said that never, you know, vaccines... You know, caused her, some friend of hers, daughter, to turn into a zombie or something. I'm guessing that's what it is. But their vaccines are going to cull the population down to 500 million. This guy's been reading up on the Georgia Guidestones a little too much lately. The Who's Got an Old Car competition is now well underway. Steve writing in, mine's 17 years old, past due on its safety inspection, tickets and parked, hidden at a friend's place. America. Marty updating on his windows. One works, one needs a window regulator and taped up. Two, the front two, are electrical issues. Marty noting, by the way, Mike Papantonio, subbing for Hartman the past couple of days, a refreshing couple of days of the Papatath, has a name for those who will sell their sheepskin to deny man-made climate change. Can't remember the name, though. Apparently, Louis and Alan appear to have forgotten that after the last mass non-man-made human extinction, the Black Death, we had a little period called the Renaissance. True. It was the Black Death that enabled craftspeople to create what was a sort of medieval version of a rising middle class, right? Yeah. From Kate, thanks to the listeners. She says, some days I get worried that there's no interest in paying the bills. I'll never forget the day we logged on and found dead air and a cold mic. Bob's not kidding, nor is he being a drama queen when he says we're in trouble. Thanks again to Robert and Darlene. Y'all rock. You do too, Kate. You do too. Thanks all around. Thank you, Linda. Thank you very, very much. That takes us down to 30. Yeah, $30 to go to meet Darlene's challenge, and then we'll get started on the remainder of Robert's. He checked in with me a few minutes ago and said, yeah, he said, there were two people who stepped up to respond to his earlier challenge. So that'll be 150, and it'll get us where we need to go or where we need to be, because I can't guarantee tomorrow night's program. It's that simple. So, vaccines, and some of those. What did Louis Gohmert's colleague Paul Brown of Georgia, science is lies from the pits of hell. Remember? Yeah. Well, vaccines are going to cull the population, and remember the elites are going to do it. Little things here and there. Agence France-Presse reporting that in fact it's a virus and no vaccine. It's a virus that's been wiping out hundreds of bottlenose dolphins in the Atlantic Ocean since last month. 333 bottlenose dolphins are accounted for as having died in the mid-Atlantic region since July. And the last time this happened was, back in 1987-88, when 740 of the bottlenose dolphins died, and this may be worse. And it's a measles-like vaccine called, morbillivirus. Terry Rolls is with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. She's part of the Fisheries, Marine Mammal Health, and Stranding Response Program. Them liberal government programs that we don't need none of. What the hell good is that? See, that's how we get in deficit trouble and have to get all austerity-wise. Jesus. Terry Wall says, we are expecting that if indeed this plays out the way that die-off occurred, then we're looking at mortality being higher and morbillivirus spreading southward and likely continuing until spring of 2014. Ours is not a well planet. This summer alone, 9 times the average number of dolphins have washed up on the shores of the East Coast. Most of them, when they're found, are already dead. The primary hypothesis is that East Coast dolphins simply don't have the immune response to effectively fight off the virus. Now, here's what's fascinating. The morbillivirus is kin to the measles virus in humans, the distemper virus in dogs, and the, what's it called, among cattle. All these things mutate one animal to another, humans to animals, animals to humans, yada, yada, yada. And the next thing you know, you've got bottlenose dolphins washing up in their hundreds on Atlantic seashore beaches. Thank you, Jack. Thank you very much. $10 to go now to meet Darlene's challenge, and that is wonderful. With only 30 minutes gone in the program, that means I think we can also meet, hopefully we can take care of, we can meet Robert's challenge as well. And hooray! Thank you, Michael. Darlene's challenge has been met, and we're $10 on the way to the $150 we need to raise to meet Robert's challenge. So 140 to go, 14 at 10. Thank you very much. This Morbilla virus is kin to a virus family that, as noted, can cause measles in humans, canine distemper in dogs and wolves, and rinderpest. That was the cattle disease that I was looking for, rinderpest. And yet, this is one of those goddess of irony moments. Stories like this come out right as people like Louis are babbling their silly little fool heads off, and that just to let the rest of us know that they're idiots. Ah, okay. More challenges going on than may necessarily meet the eye. Robert noting, my car is 22 years old. It just passed its rego inspection, and apart from a few rust spots covered with clear nail polish. I didn't know you could do that. That's brilliant. Everything works. My previous car, which I had for about 10 years, rusted through and fell apart. I'd love to go electric, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. No, where the electric car is concerned, I'm fascinated by it. But it's worth noting that the huge growth in different engines is with the so-called new clean diesels. What is it, fully a third of the cars on the road in Europe are clean diesels? And even so far, the big player in that market has been Volkswagen. But this year, it's already been introduced elsewhere, but this year, Mazda will be introducing its Mazda 6 sedan with a clean diesel engine in the United States, and that's going to be a big deal. Because here's the trick. With hybrids, most people in hybrids experience really, really good mileage in things like city driving, but not so great on the highway driving as compared with the expected numbers. Whereas in highway driving with the clean diesel engines, you get even more. You get even more higher mileage, and the emissions are significantly reduced. I don't think they're quite on a par with the emissions coming out of a hybrid, and of course there are zero emissions with a car that is strictly electric, unless you take into account how the electricity is being created with which you're charging the vehicle. Anyway, back to the morans. And yes, they are morans. It's not Moran Monday anymore, but thank you, Marty. They are morans, not idiots, morans. So, for some reason or another, conditions have become favorable in the Atlantic Ocean for a whole bunch of bottlenose dolphins to go fins up. Which leads us, before we go wandering across the Red River up to Oklahoma-stan, back to Texas. Remember, Louis Gohmert and Alan Keyes there, in that well-funded little right-wing bizarro radio show. Well, you heard it, and I'm not going to play it again. Don't worry. You have nothing to fear. No, Ted Turner and... I have a hard time even saying it. Ted Turner and Bill Gates are engaged in a conspiracy to kill off a whole bunch of the planet so that everybody will simply serve them. Makes it sound like they've got kind of a Vol. Remember Vol? Was it Vol? V-A-A-L? Some sort of a Vol fetish. Vol. All hail Vol. But it turns out if anybody is helping to spread diseases, oh look, let's go to church. Let's go to church in particular in Texas, Stan. Let's go to the Eagle Mountain International Church. It is, of course, a mega church. I'm sure it has a sound system that would make the stones weep. And by the stones, I don't mean, you know, geology. I mean Mick and the boys, Mick and Keith. Eagle Mountain International Church of... Where?
Oh, come on. I mean, we know it's Texas.
Well, anyway, it's Texas. Oh, ministries. Okay, maybe that'll tell us where they are. I guess you find them if you need them or something like that. But the Eagle Mountain International Church, yes, it's a mega church, and yeah, it's got a sound system to make the stones weep, and jumbotrons and crap like that. And it turns out that the Eagle Mountain International Church are also what is known as vaxxers. They oppose vaccinations because I guess God's going to take care of them and let the heathens be killed off or something, whatever. Newark, Texas. Thank you, Marty. Eagle Mountain International Church. And a whole bunch of their members are unvaccinated. It's apparently in Tarrant County, Texas. They're a subsidiary of Kenneth Copeland Ministries. Kenneth Copeland being one of those prosperity gospel types. This is not Wednesday prayer meeting. But this is important. This is what happens when religious superstition wins out over science. Last night, Ferg and I watched Carl Sagan's last ever interview. He did it with Charlie Rose. And it was obvious that Dr. Sagan was dying of cancer, and yet he was still out there pushing the last book that he wrote that had to do with astrology and fundamentalist religion and the general rejection of science. And he pointed out in that final interview just how dangerous that sort of thing is. And welcome to it with Eagle Mountain International Church, Kenneth Copeland Ministries, and the head pastor at Eagle Mountain Church, Terry Copeland Pearsons, apparently Kenneth's daughter. There has been an outbreak of measles in Texas that has sickened at least 21 people in the northern part of the state. And, of course, Kenneth Copeland Ministries goes in for, you know, the laying on of the hands and the faith healing. And they preach against vaccinations, and that's why a whole bunch of their congregation is unvaccinated. But it's gone outside their church. But the Texas State Epidemiologist, which I'm surprised to find they even have, I was reading over at Charlie Pierce's blog earlier today, and apparently there is no mandatory inspection for people who store ammonium nitrate, like in West Texas, because that's job-killing regulations. But no, Texas does have a state epidemiologist, and he went to work on this measles outbreak and found out that with it having come to light about 2 weeks ago, it ran all over the church. A man became sick with measles while traveling to Indonesia, passed the infection to the other attendees at the megachurch, and they get about 1,000 people every Sunday. He got home from Indonesia and gave a whole bunch of people the measles. The measles spread to the congregation, the staff, and a daycare center on church property with a lot of little people who had not been allowed to be vaccinated. Oh, God. The overall vaccination rate, I read here in Tarrant County, is about 98%. But Eagle Mountain International Church accounts for a whole bunch of that remaining 2%. The little children in the daycare center who got the measles because they weren't vaccinated, well, they're homeschooled. You know, they read those books about how Adam and Eve rode to church every Sunday on the back of a friendly vegan Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Marty is right there. Yeah, exactly, Marty. Marty's right there. He said, and think. That church is tax exempt. Yep. We're paying for them to urge people not to get vaccinated and thereby possibly start epidemics or pandemics. Okay, thanks, Marty. Newark, Texas is approximately 21 miles northwest of Fort Worth. Fort Worth? Where's Sergi when we need him? Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs. Subject line, subsidiary of Kenneth Copeland. That ought to tell you all you need to know, says Kevin, about these people, and there isn't one good thing in all those things you ought to know. Well, true. Good God. But because the First Amendment is nothing more than a husk of its former self and little more at all than a life support system for the religion industry, well, it's apparently okay to be a little cesspool of potential pandemics. See, if you homeschool your youngins, the law says you don't have to get your kids vaccinated. And that would be your MMR vaccine, your measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Among other things, Terry Copeland Pearson is the minister there at Eagle Mountain International. Is one of those people who's down with 1L Michelle Bachman, who thinks that vaccinations cause autism and zombieism. And yeah, she's the oldest daughter of Kenneth Copeland, another anti-vaxxer, and faith healer, and argues that we put too much stock in the scientific community. Via Twitter, Jason shooting a note along, hey Bob, no faith healer has ever healed anything but their bank account. Find one person ever healed by one of these con artists. And, yeah, it's approaching mathematical zero. Now, measles, see, we tend to think of measles as one of those childhood illnesses, right? I mean, I had a very strange childhood. My parents were not fundies, and they actually thought highly of science. You know, my father was using science in turning hunks every day for a living, in turning hunks of quartzite into, well, he was boiling the oxygen out of them, burning the oxygen out of them, and the remainder is silicon, because quartzite rock is SiO2. So if you burn away the two atoms of the oxygen, the liquid metal silicon pours into the chill, and daddy gets a paycheck. And, well, that included things like health care. But for some reason, I was a sick kid. You know, Bob, you're a sick, sick man, too. I was a sick kid, and the vaccine didn't take. And consequently, even though I had my measles vaccine, I got the measles anyway. And as a point of fact, I got them in second grade about a week and a half after I had the chicken pox. And then the mumps came along. And you're only supposed to get mumps once. If you get them on both sides, you get mumps once and it's over with. And I got them twice. And it's hell. It's a dangerous disease. Things like chicken pox, smallpox, cowpox, great pox, the common cold were sufficient to wipe out the vast majority of the population of the single most populated continents on the entire planet long about the 16th century. You know, the Americas. Kenneth Copeland Ministries' position regarding dealing with any medical condition involving yourself or someone in your family is to first seek the wisdom of God, His Word, and appropriate medical attention from a professional that you know and trust. apply wisdom and discernment. Oh, God, again with the discernment. Remember the Gordy Klingenschmidt last night, Chappie, who was out there discerning demons in Madonna? Like I said, I'm keeping a weather eye out for the hissy that he'll have over Miley Cyrus. I got a note earlier today from our buddy Michael, Kid A, from the chat room when he's in there. Michael noting that... He sent me a note earlier this afternoon. Breaking news. Secretary of State John Kerry, White House making informed decision how to respond to the Video Music Awards in light of compelling evidence that innocent civilians were twerked. Military entertainment experts anticipating unilateral cruise missile strike on the Miley Cyrus compound. You know, there's a generational thing there. David Letterman has long said that he regrets the fact that he, the last time that he could have had the prophet Bill Hicks on his program, peace be upon him, he wouldn't let him do the bit because he said it was too over the top. It turned out the bit was the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, saying that he had just been engaged to do a new TV show called Let's Hunt and Kill Billy Ray Cyrus. That was too over the top. And here we are. Yeah, thanks, Michael. Thanks. So you've got to use your wisdom and your discernment in carrying out the doctor's recommendation for treatment. This would include vaccinations, immunizations, surgeries, prescriptions, or any other medical procedures, as long as they didn't have anything to do with keeping the lady parts from getting little snowflake babies implanted in them, right? Because that Jesus don't like that. 90% of unvaccinated people who are exposed to measles get measles. At one point in time, measles killed about 500 Americans every year. We just about had measles eradicated in the United States until the Kenneth Copeland types came along and said, no, no, no. I mean, right to life. The measles virus is life, too. It's got a right to life. Yeah, pray it away. William Shatner, not Shatner, damn it, an infectious disease expert from Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, said in a USA Today article, this is a sadly misinformed religious leader. Ofer. It was in mid-August when the church was notified about the measles outbreak and the fact that they were causing it. And even so, Terry Copeland Pearson has continued to say that she doesn't, you know, she's got misgivings, you know, because God talks to her, you know, not science. She's got misgivings about vaccinations. The concerns we have had are primarily with very young children who have a family history of autism and with bundling too many immunizations at one time. I'm guessing if I peek into the chat room here, are you there, Lottie? Are you screaming yet? Yeah, see? Lottie. Bob, refusing vaccines is all part of God's plan for population reduction. Oh, don't worry, Ralphs. I promise. I will not play either Miley Cyrus or her daddy Billy Ray. Ain't going to be nothing aching nor breaking on this here radio program, I swear, so you don't have to run screaming from the chat room. Okay? Okay. Marty noting, good thing I didn't go to that church. Imagine rupturing one's Achilles tendon and not getting it reattached. I don't think faith healing would have done the job repairing it. Do you? No. No, you would be walking with a very interesting and probably incredibly painful limp, Marty. but that's something I read once upon a time. It was one of those little prayers that hangs on the wall. Dear God, may those who love us, and those who do not love us, may you turn their hearts. And if you cannot turn their hearts, dear Lord, turn their ankles, that we may know them by their limping. Once upon a time, I found that funny. Now I'm just not so sure. Oddly enough, and remember, this is Texas and conservatives and right-wing fundamentalist religion. Oddly enough, the Tarrant County Public Health Department showed up on August the 18th and 25th and conducted a vaccination clinic for free to the people who are tax-exempt in the first place. Jeebus. Let's see. This is the statement from the public health announcement from Eagle Mountain International Church. We ask that others join us in prayer over this outbreak, and we believe that God is moving on behalf of each affected family. We know the truth. We are healed according to Isaiah 53:4-5. Hut! Hut! And I, Peter... 224. I didn't know there was an I, Peter. So agree with us that this will stop now according to Matthew 18:19. Please take time to read the information below and be led by the Lord regarding what He tells you to do for you and your family. You get the idea. Well, no, I'm sure this is not how the Black Death started. Seek first the wisdom. Once you get sick and the fever begins to burn you up, before you even reach for the ibuprofen or the aspirin, seek the wisdom of God, who, of course, is not there. His word... You're supposed to read some barely literate babble from people who were confused by wheelbarrows and didn't know why it rained. I mean, I'm just curious. What is it that 1 Peter 2:24 says? Titanic intellect of the right wing. I, Peter, 2:24. What does that say? I prefer the King James Version. I know you do too. Who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we being dead to sins, we should live unto righteousness, by whose stripes ye were healed. So what does that mean? We need to go flog some Palestinian dude and you'll feel better? Nothing in there about not getting vaccinated, but then again, these people were baffled by wheelbarrows, so the idea of vaccination was probably a little lost on them, too. How about Isaiah 53:4-5? Of course, this isn't the Christians' book. This doesn't belong to them, but they just sort of rudely co-opted it. Here we go. Oh, it's the same crap. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet did we esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our iniquities, and the chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. What's with the stripes? I mean, some of us like solid colors. Stripes. Horizontal? Vertical? What if the stripes are the wrong way? Good God, the stupidity. Wow. Thank you very kindly, Robert. Different Robert. $150 just rolled in. we're done with the evening's fundraising. Hallelujah. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Robert in Australia. Thank you all. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Kate. This from Dr. John. Subject line, vaccines. The theory that Gohmert and Keyes are getting at is that vaccines will contain agents to sterilize the recipients. Depopulation through attrition. Of course, vaccines are the go-to example of why evolution is a fact, so there's the added benefit of throwing shade on that. That's it. All these years I've been saying, hey, you fundies, don't get the damn flu shot because that's evolved. Somebody was listening. And I ought not have been saying that because, see, when the morons get sick, they get the rest of us sick too because they don't have enough common decency to stay home and... No, one of these little fundy freaks flies off to Indonesia. Jesus. So you see how it works here. Stripes? No, Ron and Raleigh, I am not talking about the Bill Murray movie. Okay. Bob, I believe when they say stripes, they mean the stripes that result from a flogging. Yeah, flog the illness out of them. That'll do it. Sure thing, you bet. This from Jason via Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. Why would anyone trust their health to people who believe the world was flat and sea monsters lived over the edge? I mean, seriously! Yeah, that too. But this is not the end of the brilliance of the right wing. Oh, man. You hear our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, call in from time to time. And you know that he was the front man for a blues band. And if you're going to be the front man for a blues band, especially one that plays in bars, you got to have a good patter. And Bill still got it. I mentioned I. Peter a minute ago. Yeah, Bill writes in, I. Peter out early. Oh, God. Okay, so once more unto the breach, dear friends. Hold on. Let's go to the phones. 304-658-3333. The Skype line is also open. Bob Kincaid Horn. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Bob?
I don't know. I'm staying away from the Eagle Mountain International Church and viral cesspool, I think.
Well, I ain't never been to Texas, and I have no plans of ever going there. I don't know. It seems like a...
Well, I'm there in a couple of weeks, but fortunately for me, we're not going to Newark, Texas.
Well, I don't know. I'd just be afraid of, being in a restaurant and having the fertilizer plant next door blowing up or something like that.
And, well, it's a risk.
Vaporizing. But... I've read a couple of stories about Texas lately. You know, I had a couple of friends from Texas. I have this, and this is Dave from Portland. And
I was guessing.
Yeah. You'll get to know me one of these days. But, anyway, I had a couple of renters in my house over the years. They were from Texas and a couple of really nice guys too. They were, owners from San Antonio and, real hard-working guy, and then another fellow that was from Austin. I'm really a political liberal, but I don't know.
Being a big state, there are a lot of progressive and liberal folks there, and the biggest problem Texas has right now is the voter suppression and the gerrymandering.
I hear they're running out of water over there too. So
well, there's that. I mean, they Yeah, they're not running out. It's not like it just no. They've been fracked out of their water.
Right, right. Well, they've despoiled it all, fracking everything, and they won't listen to reason. So let them. I just screw Texas. I don't want to go anywhere near there. In the opposite end of the country from me, anyway. But
well, be careful though, because you're going to put some people off. We've got some awesome progressive friends in Texas. And
move out here. They should come out. They should come to the West Coast or get out of there.
No, hold on.
Okay.
Because you're never going to find. I mean, and I'm not trying to be mean.
Yeah.
But if you live in a nice progressive place or a nice progressive state where you're more likely to run into people on a daily basis who think like you do, it's real easy to sort of get into a bubble. Where
I know what you're saying,
yeah. And frankly, Southern progressives, you couldn't get them out of the South with a pitchfork, because they love their homes as much as you love yours, yeah, and they want to, and they're willing to take extreme risks and speak up and speak out boldly and proudly in the face of people who, you know, Klan types and Repiglicans and teabaggers and stuff like that. And they'll stare them eyeball to eyeball, and they probably have a lot to teach the rest of us about courage and guts.
This is true, but I don't know. I the only place I ever went in the South was Florida, and I didn't like it that much. I loved St. Augustine this night.
Well, There's an ongoing open debate about just how much one counts Florida as the South.
Yeah.
Up in the Northern Panhandle, most assuredly.
Yeah, it was. We went to Orlando, which was pretty much like L.A. without the culture. And then I was looking through a tourist book, and I said, "Oh, we got to go here." Dragged the family up to St. Augustine, spent a couple of days up there. That was nice. It was really pretty. I love that fort that they have up there, the Castillo de San Marcos. That was really cool.
Yeah, North America's oldest city, is it not?
Yeah, it's really cool. Totally, totally cool. I was an art major in college, and I took a year of American art and architecture, and that's the first thing you study in American art and architecture is that Castillo de San Marcos. And it's really one of the oldest buildings, you know, Western buildings in North America. Very cool. But I don't know. I just didn't have much interest in going back there. And every story I hear about that over there, it's just I had a buddy that moved here from, he was from Boston, and he came here and lived in Portland about 4 years, and then he moved out to Memphis. He only lasted about a year out there, and then he ran back up to Boston. Got out just before they had that flood, too. He was lucky.
And that's, you know, that's not surprising. I'm a Southerner. I'll be the first one to tell you that it's a hard place to get accustomed to, especially if you're not accustomed to it, I guess. It's just sort of. Because I don't think. And I'm guessing, but I don't think I would have as hard a time getting accustomed to, say, Boston or Portland. I mean, I'm getting ready to go to Madison, Wisconsin, which has just got tons of progressive people in it, and I would be as happy as a hog in a waller in any of those places, at least until winter arrived, or in your case, till the rains came.
I love the rain. It rained here last night, and I was just kind of, I was going to mow the lawn yesterday, you know. My front lawn is like a dandelion farm, but it rained. It started raining in the early afternoon, and so I bagged it for yesterday. But I have a lot of trouble cutting those dandelions down, too, because the bees love them. You know?
Well, the bees love them, and have you ever picked the, as long as it hasn't had a bunch of turf builder or various and sundry poisons thrown all over it, have you ever picked the very, very tiny, tender dandelion green leaves and eaten them?
No, but I know that they're edible. I should.
They're magnificent. You can sort of blanch them in boiling water and then saute them with some olive oil and some onions, a little bit of lemon juice and some salt. Oh, my God.
Really?
Yeah. Or you can just eat them straight up in a salad. I mean, they're a tonic. They're good for you like you cannot imagine something being good for you.
Yeah.
All greens are good for you, but dandelion greens are just awesome.
Yeah, I think I've seen them on the menu in a restaurant in parts of salads or something like that. But I should try that out. I should give that a try. I don't put any of that stuff on my lawn either. My lawn, it's scourge.
Yeah, just, you know, if they get really big, they're going to be tough. But when they're young, you just kind of pluck them down and get you a big mess of them, rinse them off in cold water real good. If you think they may have a little excess of dirt on it, you can take some coarse kosher salt because it won't necessarily dissolve in the cold water, and it acts as a scrubbing agent in the cold water, and it'll get all the dirt off, and you rinse them off, and like I said, drain them real good, then either blanch them or boil them. Of course, you know, being a Southerner, I can't cook greens without throwing something made of smoked pork in with it. But you don't necessarily have to have that. Just a little bit of olive oil, but then take them out and saute them real quick. I forget what other term I'm looking for, but, you know, in a skillet with oil and little tiny pieces of slivered onion and maybe capers and lemon juice and the aforementioned salt. And whoa, yeah. I like hot sauce with it, too.
Sounds good. Sounds really delicious.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you for opening the door on the food porn segment of the program this evening.
I had no intention thereof, but I guess that's where it went. I was really enjoying your show last night. I was listening to, what's the gentleman's name from the South? He's talking about the Russian history.
That was Jim.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. I my compliments to you, Jim. I'm sure you're listening. I enjoyed that very much. I talking about history, I never knew nothing about. They never taught me that over here in public school in U.S. of A.
Well, you know, the older you get, the more you figure out exactly how much you haven't been taught.
Yeah, it was really cool. I liked that a lot. But, you know, then you had that caller who was the quote unquote Kennedy JFK.
Yeah, that was Mark.
Democrat, the one talking about the Jews. I didn't dig on that too much.
No, that's why I pushed back a little bit. I don't like that kind of stuff.
I wasn't enjoying that too much because I don't know. You know, I'm kind of resentful. You know, I'm a Jew and I was left out of that international financial conspiracy.
you didn't. You haven't gotten the check.
Pisses me off every day. Yeah, I never got the check, and I never was. They never even told me about what was going on.
Wait, you don't get up every morning and determine what the international financial Well, you know, that's a little. You remind me of our dear friend Peter Godbold, who back in the day, and you know, Peter was the only gay guy who was doing a five nights a week program at the time. But he said, you know, these right-wingers keep talking about the gay agenda. And Peter would say, I'm as gay as you can be. And nobody ever gave me a copy.
Yeah. He never was briefed on it.
No, I wasn't invited to the meetings.
God, yeah, that's really, it's offensive when they don't tell you what's going on. And they want to represent you. But seriously, you would never know I was Jewish, though. Because I'm more like a... Morocco. I'm my mom was a WASP. She was from Central California, you know, kind of farm country, and I looked like her. So I mean, you would never have known if you saw me with my dad. You'd never know that we were even related, because my dad was short and had a giant, huge nose and was not a good looking guy. And my mom was very beautiful and about his height. Who, you know, I mean, my dad was a doctor, though, so he was, you know, he was a 10. That's a 4 with an MD. So,
Oh, okay. I had no idea, but now I do.
I have you were talking about your childhood. Yeah, I had a very strange childhood, too, because, you know, my cousins are evangelical Christians, and they're hardcore.
Oh, do Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, big time. And one of them lives over there in Colorado Springs, and another one's down in the Central Valley in California, Modesto, with my aunt, who's a blue dog. But I haven't seen them much. I mean, I love them, but we don't talk much because...
Well, the available topics for conversation are probably somewhat curtailed, are they not, Dave?
Yeah, the family, it's tough. My dad was actually, you know, I was raised Jewish. We went to temple and stuff, but my dad was always a hardcore atheist because he was a surgeon, and, you know, he was like a brain surgeon. And so he saw a lot of reality that was kind of hard to reconcile with the mysticism and all that, you know?
Yeah.
He was very much like he was into living life to its fullest and enjoying it as much as possible. And, you know, he had an awesome work ethic, but he was kind of a hedonist too. But
you know what? If you're a hedonist with an awesome work ethic, that really leaves little room for complaining about anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? He dug his work so much, and he worked so hard, and he was kind of like a workaholic. That's what he was. He was a workaholic. He just loved his work so much, and it's real difficult growing up with somebody like that as a parent because they have unattainable expectations. And I didn't want to be a doctor, and I didn't want to go down that road. But
it's a lot of hard work. There's no doubt about it.
Oh yeah, well he was just nuts. He worked until he was like, you know, all the time when he was alive, I knew that he wouldn't last very long after he retired, and he died about 6 months after he retired, and he was 85 years old when he retired too.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane. He actually, you know, when he hit about 70, his practice stopped. He stopped getting elective cases a lot, and he did a lot of. I mean, he was a super hard worker, but he stopped getting elective cases. So he just started. He went gonzo and went into like trauma, and so he was up at all hours of the night at 75 and taking care of gunshot wounds and people going through the windshield at 2 a.m. and that kind of stuff. Because he just loved his work so much. And he mentored a lot of doctors. He taught at USC and other colleges and around LA. He was into it. He was into it. And he did good things, you know. It's just, we didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, a lot of, you know, personal issues and stuff. But I loved him very much. He was an awesome guy, an amazing guy.
Well, he sounds like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, anybody that he ever took care of, you know, like worshipped him. And I just say he was an atheist, but if he hadn't, then he would have had a God complex because it's like the old joke. You know, the difference between God and a neurosurgeon is, don't you?
No. God doesn't think he's a neurosurgeon?
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so he was actually very humble, though, you know, because he realized that, you know, where he was in life and at all points, but he was a real womanizer, too. He had a strong drive, and so he cheated on my mom and all that stuff, but I forgive him. I loved him. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm in some really heavy stuff right now. I'm being sued by Chase Bank.
Yeah, you had mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this was a while back. I was telling you about it, but I went in for my first hearing because I wrote a response to them. I think maybe I talked to you about the response. I said, you know, these guys don't have even standing to sue me to take my house. They don't have an interest in the house. They're none of what they're saying is legitimate. And I went in for our first preliminary hearing, and the attorney is representing this firm called RCO, which is Ralph Crabtree and Olson. They're a foreclosure mill on the West Coast, and she didn't even show for the hearing. And what I want to do is turn my case into a complex case, but the thing is, I'm kind of a trailblazer here because no one has ever done this in Multnomah County. That's the county of Portland.
Right.
In Oregon. No one's ever done a complex case, but I've uncovered a lot of provable evidence of robo-signing, and I'm getting a securitization audit done on my mortgage right now. But I already have a lot of evidence that.
Well, you're gonna have to have a judge who's willing to let that stuff in.
Yeah. Well, the I've been an activist for about a year and a half now. I think I may have mentioned that. I'm working with some people who are in the same boat, and I've seen some really pretty hairy stuff go down over the last year and a half. Some of my cohorts have been forcibly evicted from their house by the sheriffs, and we've had demonstrations down at the sheriff's office, and the sheriff over here is a coward. He ran for cover when he saw us coming, but we were just trying to put out the word that these foreclosures and everything are illegitimate. And the judges, you're right, the judges and the sheriffs and all of the establishment here is complicit with it all. So I'm planning on taking my case into federal pretty soon. I'm going to switch it over because I don't think they're going to let me go complex case in Multnomah County. And I actually know the judge. It's really been great being an activist because I know all these judges too, and I know their dispositions and stuff. And so I'm better prepared than a lot of other people would be. I was well prepared for my hearing back last Thursday. They're just trying to pull this crap, this cookie cutter stuff, and I'm not going for it. And if they won't let me. They won't accept my evidence. I have documented evidence, like I said. They won't accept my evidence, and then screw them. I'm going to federal. I'll take it into federal and fight it there.
Well, good luck. But can I throw something out there?
Sure.
Even if you have to go to legal aid or something, please don't go in without a lawyer.
Well, you know what? I'm looking for an attorney. If I can prove securities fraud. If I can prove securities fraud, which I'm doing this audit right now on my mortgage, if I can prove that, then it widens out my case and it makes it a lot more palatable to a lot more attorneys.
I think so. And I'm not, I mean, I'm not by any means trying to take away from what is obviously your significant intellect. But
no, I understand what you're saying, though.
It's a brutal and Byzantine maze, and
I agree.
A lawyer on the other side will just abuse what you don't know.
Absolutely.
Because things that make perfect sense in everyday life make none in the law, and things that make no sense in everyday life are perfectly rational in the law.
Sure. I know what you're saying, and they
just the challenge of getting the loan documents admitted into evidence. You know, that's a very specified kind of knowledge.
Right. I know that's true. It's been frustrating though for me. You know, I'm trying to find an attorney that will help me, and I may have one person that might be able to do it. But a lot of the problem is with a lot of these attorneys is they don't think out of the box. They just don't have they don't have a desire they can't comprehend a lot of the stuff the points that I'm trying to bring out.
Part of that stems from the fact that they are used to thinking about things in legal ways, and again, that ain't necessarily a reflection of the way the real world operates. You know, the law generally operates about at least a half a generation behind societal change. That's how, for instance, if you've been listening to Dr. Bill, And you heard last week his discussion of Lochner, which is 1905, and had to do with the state of New York trying to keep bakers from being worked to death for the sake of public, and also in the name of public safety, and, well, some moderate humanitarian impulse, especially for the beginning of the 20th century. That's why the Supreme Court said, well, hell no, you're interfering with the privity of contract, and there's nothing more sacred in America, short of Jesus Christ, than the privity of contract. You can't do that.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that show. I remember that conversation. Yeah, yeah. They were talking about all about AIG and paying all the bonuses to boys at AIG, McCain coming out and saying, oh, well, contract sacred.
And remember, there's a bunch of right-wingers out there who think that Lochner was, and just about everybody in the world thinks that Lochner was improperly, incorrectly decided, but there are a bunch of right-wing, so-called conservatives, yada, 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 who think we need to go back to the days of Lochner, because Lochner effectively kept unions at bay. They kept government health and safety regulations at bay, and furthered this sort of predatory, capitalist, bloodthirsty wonderland that obtained at the time. And we must always remember, Dave, that that is the world to which these Ayn Rand worshippers and these Milton Friedmanites, this is the world that they deem to be the golden age of capitalism.
Well, maybe the ones in charge, but I don't even think that most of the, you know, foot soldiers comprehend or could comprehend what you're even saying here. You know what I'm saying? They don't even, you know.
Oh, they don't have to. I mean, I've had the conversations. The people who are anti-union, and it usually is done with a Southern accent, will say, well, maybe once upon a time we needed unions. But we don't need them no more because the workplaces are safe and people are getting paid a fair wage, and they've outlived their usefulness.
Sure.
And you just want to tear at rend your garments and tear at your hair, because the only reason that those work, and obviously American workplaces are not safe, and we certainly live in brutal working conditions than, say, folks in France or Germany or Italy or Great Britain, or any God knows the Scandinavian countries, certainly Australia, maybe even Japan. I just have a hard time saying Japan without thinking of Fukushima, because, you know, that certainly is the joker in the deck there. But, you know, most Americans, well, like I was talking about earlier when we were talking about cars, you know, the average age of a car on the American road is 11 years old. Okay.
Really?
Well, that car is being driven by someone who is not guaranteed and probably does not get so much as 2 weeks paid vacation per year.
Yeah.
When in fact in the more enlightened states of Europe and the rest of the world, 6 weeks paid vacation is, unless I am quite wrong, the bare minimum.
Used to be, at least.
Yeah. I mean,
still in Germany.
And I just had a note in from Robert in Australia. He said, I recall being at a primary school and receiving the polio vaccine given to the world for free by its developer, Jonas Salk. Hey, can you imagine Big Pharma doing that now? No. Each class took it in turn to go and receive what looked like a small serving of strawberry jam on a tiny plastic spoon. I think we had a couple of these over a few days. I've seen the video footage of Australia prior to the polio vaccine. Hundreds of children crippled every year. Do these people want to go back to that? And, well, yeah, they do, because then they can pray over them and get money out of them. Because, of course, you know, if you want the praying to be really good, you got to pony up some money, right? So Robert continues, Dave, and he says, sadly, we have the anti-vaccination people here in Australia who call themselves the Australian Vaccination Network, Inc. That's right, a pro-vaccination-sounding name for an anti-vaccination group. Fortunately, the New South Wales Fair Trading Department has instructed them to change their name because it's misleading. See, that's that nanny state government that the right wing's forever railing against, job-killing regulations and so forth. Robert says they have a magazine called Living Wisdom, and all you need to know about it is one of the on the site's disclaimer page. The publishers, authors, and editors of Living Wisdom are not responsible for the results of any actions taken on the basis of information in this publication. Robert says they're also in trouble for selling subscriptions to their magazine and then not publishing it three times.
You know, we've had a few cases of those faith-based idiots over here in Oregon, too.
Oh, no, y'all have a straight-up problem. You've got that one little sect out there that is notorious for just letting kids die.
Yeah, well, the thing about Oregon is you got Portland, and you got Eugene and Alabama in between, pretty much. It's pretty, when you get out of the big cities, it's pretty much like any place else in rural America. You know, the populations of Portland and Eugene rule the state, but, you know, Greg Walden down south, down in southern Oregon, he's a piece of work.
Oh.
Yeah. You know Walden.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He really is. And, DeFazio's great. I'll let DeFazio on our
Oh, yeah. He's on the AK.
Yeah. He's awesome. And, Blumenauer's pretty good, too. Is he on the AK?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's.
And we were working. Who's the woman who replaced David Wu?
Rivalda. Hello.
No. I can't remember her name right off the top of my head. But we've been in her office and trying to get her on board.
Well, that's good. Yeah, Merkley is awesome too, Jeff Merkley.
Yeah. See, I can't understand. I mean. We're trying desperately to get the AIC Act introduced in the Senate, and you'd think this would be a no-brainer for a guy like Jeff Merkley. But the problem lies in the fact, in what they call collegiality in the Senate, which basically is an excuse for saying, I don't want somebody introducing laws about affecting my state, so I won't speak out for people who are being poisoned by an industry in some other senator's state. Kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. I think it's I'm really pretty disgusted with the Senate, but Merkley is one of the best. I know we had he replaced Gordon Smith too, who was lousy. Really, really didn't like Smith. I actually met him. You know, when I was in college, I took this course called the. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I took this course called the Power Game, and it was really cool. It was a role playing class. Where you assumed the role of a representative in Congress, and we would have these committee meetings, and I got into this class late, and so I ended up being this guy Larry Combest from West Texas, the chairman of the Ag Committee. This is back 12 years ago or something. I don't think he's even in the Congress anymore, but at the end of the course, this was in June of 2000. There was a big controversy here in Oregon about Gordon Smith was doing something going against abortion, and abortion is, you know, freedom of choice is very popular here.
Yes,
it was really hurting him in the polls, and he actually addressed our class, but the media was there, and it was a big thing, and you know, got to meet him and. Seemed like a congenial guy up close and personal, but his position on the issues was terrible. He was a terrible guy. And I remember when he was going, he ran against Wyden a couple of times. I think once he ran against Wyden and he got his ass handed to him, and then it was an open seat. I think when Bob Packwood bowed out, he took over his seat.
Right.
Got it his seat. You know, they had the Bob Packwood sale at Nordstrom's here in Portland. You know, it's ladies' dresses half off. But, anyway.
You couldn't resist, could you?
Yeah. That was an Oregon homegrown joke. But anyway, Gordon Smith, I don't think he even lasted two terms. He was just a one-termer. I was glad to see him go. No, he did last two terms. I think he did last two terms. But that was it. But, anyway. Yeah, I like Berkeley a lot. He barely made it in, too, but he's been really, really good. I mean, he's very popular here. People like him. You know, I'm sitting out at the park here in Portland. I'm at Colonel Summers Park. And it's a beautiful day, really beautiful. Little clouds in the sky, but it's about 75 degrees. I'm sitting over here by the basketball court watching people shooting hoops and just having a wonderful time. Having a wonderful time.
I bet it's a beautiful afternoon there.
Yeah, it's
I mean, there's no place more beautiful on earth, I'm told, than the Great Northwest, you know, between like what, May and October.
You get west of the Cascades, and
right?
It gets really nice here. We have a lot of like what do they call them? A lot of people that go down south in the wintertime, and then they come up here and they live up here. I had a friend who had her father had a place up in Woodland, Washington, which is about 30 miles north of Portland. And it's right on this river, and they're called the Lewis River up there in Washington, and it's gorgeous up there. It's really beautiful. And this guy had bought this property in the old days and for almost nothing. He built a house on it, and then he would go down to and hang around Rancho Mirage, Southern California, 6 months of the year. But I like the winter. I like the seasons, you know. We never had any seasons.
LA. it's late August here in the hills and hollers of what yet remains of West by God, Virginia, almost level though it be. And you can, even though there's a solid 3 weeks left of summer, you can sense that it's beginning to turn.
Yeah, summer is definitely waning out.
And we've got this old folk wisdom thing here, where in this part of the Appalachians, you count the number of fogs in August.
Count the number of fogs?
Yeah. Heavy fogs in August. The number of heavy fogs in August will tell you the number of deep snows in winter. And I've kind of kept up with it, and it works.
Oh, really?
And if that's the case, we're going to be...
We're going to be
snowed in this winter.
Going to have a heavy one, huh?
Yeah. And go ahead.
You know the thing that's going on here that you know, I didn't even realize because I don't watch much TV, but we're having all these wildfires. I mean, they're not far from Portland even. You know, they're
really, they've gotten that far north.
Yeah, and of course they've got the
because mostly I've been reading about the fire that's threatening the water and power supply for San Francisco and has just burnt the hell out of Yosemite.
Yeah. That's horrible. I that's right near where my cousins live too. I haven't talked to them, but it's the what's the name of the fire? But I know it's supposedly the biggest one in history that they've happened down there. It's these wildfires, though, they're just going to get worse, you know. Just going to get
worse. And as it turns out, after our conversation, I have some sound from Tom Coburn of Oklahoma Stan. And you'll probably just run screaming into the night. Well, it's not night there yet. You'll run screaming into the afternoon as soon as you hear it, because, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, he's out of his mind, Coburn. Football.
I'm getting grief from Larry in the chat room. He said, there you go again, Bob, applying science-y methods to weather forecasting.
I think that... these wildfires, yeah, we've got a big one out. I don't know if it's out now, because we had a couple of days where it was cloudy and cool, and it rained at night, and may have slowed it down a lot. But there was the Rim Fire, is the one down in California. That's
right.
The Rim Fire, but there's one out just in the up in the Cascades and east of the Cascades that's burning right now. I don't know. They don't tell us what's going on though. I think a lot of the states are just, you know,
And remember, that's wasteful government spending that's fighting those fires.
Yeah.
Unless the fire happens to get close to, say, some right-winger's house, and then it's, you know, freedom, Wolverines! Right.
Well, no, actually, I think a lot of the reason why they're having these intense fires is because they've been fighting the fires too much, and the natural course is for them to burn more often.
Well, the problem occurs, Dave, when you put people where people ain't supposed to be. Now, see, there I go being all elite like Bill Gates and Ted Turner, like Louis Gohmert was talking about, and talking about how, you know, there's parts of this planet people aren't supposed to be on. But really, the natural course of life for those forests is to be periodically renewed by fire. I know it sounds crazy, but it's true.
I know. Well, growing up in California, in Southern California, we would have these fires that would just be unbelievable. And then the next year, we would have these mudslides. And remember, my godfather's house got half of it was destroyed by a mudslide from the hill up behind his house. It just pushed like a whole wing of his house in the swimming pool one year. Back in 1980, we had a lot of rain, a bit of fire, and then a lot of rain the next year, and it was like a record rain year. It was mudslides and some wild stuff too, you know, the houses over there. People build these houses on stilts.
Well, if it's mudslides and fires in the West, tornadoes in the South and Midwest, hurricanes along the coasts, blizzards, I guess, in the upper Midwest. Everybody's got something they have to deal with. Oddly enough, one of the reasons when we made the choice to live where we live is because there is, for all the poverty and everything, Appalachia, absent mountaintop removal, didn't have a lot of weather disasters.
Relatively calamity free, huh?
Yeah. But now, of course, with mountaintop removal, we have a profound and deep predilection for massive flash flooding, because everything that absorbed the rain before, you know, the mountains that aren't there anymore.
Sure.
Yeah, well, the rain just come straight down the holler, and, you know, good luck, and Katie bar the door and get the boat out.
Right. Well, how long have they been doing mountaintop removal?
It was started in the early 1970s, but it really went just mad beginning with the Bush administration when they changed the fill rule in the stream buffer zone. Okay. And that was one of those Bush-era Orwellian clarifications.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they clarified to make sure that the filth from blowing up mountains was not deemed to be pollution, so you could just dump it in any old stream. And by dump it in a stream, we mean bury the stream. And in point of fact, I've got a news story here out of Kentucky. And lo and behold, a federal judge has told a coal company they can go ahead and blow the hell out of a mountain complex up above some little hill communities, and too bad, because the judge says that and I mean, it just blew my mind. Our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky sent this along, and it's the judge says that the Army Corps of Engineers is absolutely not required to take into account the fact that mountaintop removal is poisoning people. So, blast them if you got them.
Insane. Well, it's just a total violation of people's rights. How can they get away with this crap? I'm getting so frustrated. So frustrated with the way things are going. It's just like they're just stepping on everybody, not respecting anybody's rights anymore. It's like the Constitution is a worthless piece of paper, like Bush said. Just, what the hell?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know.
No, it kind of, right. It you know, the federal judge who heard this case said, well, if I was hearing the permit, maybe I would rule differently. The plaintiffs have some decent arguments, but you know, I've got to afford great deference to the Army Corps of Engineers. So, you know, too bad. Fire in the hole.
Well, I thought he was the one that said that the Army Corps of Engineers did not have to take that into account. I mean,
he says they don't have to take it into account because he owes them deference.
And that's what they want. They want to not take it into account. Then, huh?
Well, they don't even think it's real. These health impacts. They think that that's just a bunch of belly aching tree huggers.
Whatever. I guess it's just going to go on until people just start getting angry enough to resist.
Here's the direct quote, Dave. Plaintiffs make a number of compelling and well documented arguments. Were the court deciding the permit issue in the first instance, perhaps its opinion would be different. However, under the highly deferential standard of review afforded to the Corps of Engineers, the court finds it did not act unreasonably.
Better.
Yeah, it didn't act unreasonably in allowing a mountain complex above an entire little holler community to just be blown to hell. Their water will be ruined. They will breathe poisonous dust for years. Cancer rates will go up. Birth defect rates will go up. Heart disease will go up. Death will go up. The little community, what's left of it, will die. People will die on the roads from monster coal trucks that are going out of control. There will be massive flooding. I said that for the longest time there wasn't a whole lot to worry about here in terms of weather disasters or natural disasters. And I immediately got a note in from Randy in PA saying, derecho anyone? And yeah, we got the snot slammed out of us by the derecho last year. And oddly enough, the derecho blew right past what used to be a mountain here that might have slowed it down a little bit if it had still been there.
Might have given you some protection.
Yeah, but now it's just this big, flat, filthy, toxic, muddy place.
Right. Well, I don't know. There comes a point, you know, I think I told you once about living in L.A., and I really like it down there. I love it down there. It's my hometown, but there came a point where the environment was so, so dirty. I mean, I got pneumonia because the air is so dirty and toxic down there.
Sure.
And I almost died. I mean, seriously, I was in bed for a week, and they wanted my dad and his buddy, his internist buddy, wanted to admit me to the hospital, and I wouldn't go. But I actually know someone else who did die from pneumonia down there in Los Angeles. And my mom almost died once too. She got pneumonia and almost died because the air down there is so dirty, so toxic. And my mom actually died of lung cancer in 2005. But I believe she moved up here to Portland from L.A. in 2002, and I believe that she contracted lung cancer down there because she sat in an office. She was an administrator for 25 years at UCLA, and she sat in an office in West L.A., and she used to work her ass off. But, I mean, she would be sitting in this office in this chair in Westwood, which is a pretty smoggy area, not as bad as a lot of areas, but smoggy enough. I know it just... I'm pretty sure.
Right, and smog is comprised of those same ultra-fine particulates that we find billowing off of mountaintop removal sites. And they're killers.
Well, you know, they've done a lot to, quote-unquote, clean up the cars down there in California. I thought I had been a smog check mechanic down there in California?
Yeah,
I was it was like DEQ, I guess. Maybe you have DEQ in West Virginia.
No, maybe.
I don't know.
We've got a Department of Environmental Protection who sees as its primary mission in life filleting the coal industry.
But you have to have your car checked every couple of years to register.
Oh, you mean a lick and stick?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you hand them $6, they put the sticker on the windshield, and you drive away.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, most places here in Oregon, we have to at least take a gas test, gas analyzer testing. They stick a gas analyzer in the tailpipe. And down in California, when I was working, it was a lot more elaborate than that. We'd have to inspect the cars, inspect all the systems and make sure they're working. But the cars nowadays, they spit out a lot more carbon dioxide. So, you know, when you're down there in Los Angeles these days, it looks a lot clearer than it used to. When I was a kid, it was just, there was a lot of brown smog. It was days before they had the catalytic converters, all the rest of it. But carbon dioxide stuff will kill you, too.
It ain't no good. Hey, Dave, it's been a wonderful conversation. I'm so glad you called in.
Yeah, nice talking to you again. I'll talk to you soon.
I hope so. You take care. Enjoy your afternoon, man.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. Dave calling from Portland. About a quarter to eight here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, Corps of Engineers. Oh, indeed. Yeah, Bob, this is the same Corps of Engineers that built the seawalls and levees in New Orleans too low. Oh, yes, by all means, they deserve a high level of deference. And I just posted the name of the judge who wrote that god-awful opinion down in Kentucky. His name is... he is U.S. District Senior Judge Thomas B. Russell of Louisville, Kentucky. And I just asked if anybody wanted to look him up in the chat room. You can feel free to, too. U.S. Senior District Judge Thomas B. Russell of Louisville, Kentucky, and find out who appointed him. I'm guessing, but I think I probably know. Although he could be. No. I'm guessing it. Yeah. Reagan? Bush? Sure. Why not? And a note from Kate. Subject line, hey, not so fast. Bob, even though we met the challenges tonight, we are not done. There is another month of past due coming right over the horizon. We can't relax until August is taken care of. And that's the honest truth. And Kate said, by the way, I don't know what started the patter, but I'd like to brag about my 15-year-old Nissan Frontier with a cap. It has over 160,000 miles, is in very good shape because I treat it like I will never have another vehicle in this lifetime. I lived in it 5 years, including 5 trips to the Gulf Coast and Tennessee from Montana and Arizona, but my unconventional domicile is always ready to roll. That, yeah. But see, that's the life we have to live. You know, we're the sustainable people. We're not like these mountaintop removal workers who feel like they have a God-given right to a new monster pickup truck every 3 years. We're the heirs of the Depression era generation that made stuff last. Oh, thank you, Marty. Homework assignment done. Thomas B. Russell, a Clinton appointee. Why am I not surprised? It's not the first time one of those people screwed us. Maybe Senior U.S. District Judge Thomas B. Russell needs to go live up a holler and maybe take somebody he loves with him, or several somebodies that he loves with him, and let him breathe the blasting dust for a few years until it's time for the funeral. Then let him go back and have his own words turn to dust in his mouth about the deference due to the Army Corps of Engineers. Yeah. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I really enjoyed. And now I'm drawing a blank. What is his name from Oregon again?
Oh, that was Dave.
Dave. I really enjoyed listening to him and you talk. What got me to call was that I stay up rather late on Twitter and that. And so about 3 in the morning our time, 5 your time, there's always a tweet that comes out for Shell, energy from Shell. And it talks about the wonderful world of fracking. And I invariably always reply to that with some sort of something about how many people has that killed, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I just want to let the people in the Horn family know, when you see this, feel free to reply to it, spam it, whatever, because they really preach a lot of BS. And that's what really bothers me about it. This one Sunday, I can't remember exactly what it said, but they were talking about how it's not unhealthy at all, and the wonderful jobs it gives, and blah blah blah.
When you say that, Kevin, you have to say jobs. That's JAWWWBZZZZZ.
Yeah.
Brings jobs. You know, so they can get more bulbs for their tanning beds.
Yeah, I realize on Twitter you could say pretty much anything you'd like to, but I can't go let something like that go.
Nor should you.
Saying something. No. But I imagine it's sent out 2-3 times a day. I just see it at the 3 o'clock hour, and unfortunately I'm not on, or fortunately, however you want to look at that, I'm not on Twitter 24 hours a day, so, but I know the times I've seen it, I started looking for it, and it's almost every time about 3 in the morning my time, so, but, you know, the other thing you mentioned is you were talking about the weather for you this winter. Could you explain that again? What is it you're looking for, or what tells you that you're going to have?
When August rolls around, we start counting the number of fogs. You know, dense fogs.
Fogs, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the number of fogs is the number of deep snows we'll get.
Yeah.
And like I said, if that trend holds true, might be time to double check the generator and get the snow shovel going.
Yeah, well, if I remember it, that might be another thing I can send shells away next time. Until fracking, we had no idea what derecho mean. So, you know, and you're talking about the mountain being taken down that would have offered you protection for it. Yeah, that makes sense. That's why what you and Dave were talking about, the fires out here. I live about 2 miles east of Garden of the Gods Park. Have you ever been to Colorado?
Sadly, no. No.
Yeah. Well, when you do make it out here, give me a call, because there's a lot of natural beauty out here.
Oh, I know. I had a sister whose husband was in the Air Force in Colorado Springs and lived there, and she pines for the place to this day.
Well, other than putting up with the right-wingers out here, it is a good place to live. But,
well, you know, you and Preston both make a good case for it being a decent place.
Yeah, and I'm looking, not hard, but I'm considering moving up to Denver for a little bit more diversity, population, whatever, where I'm at now. I like the apartment well enough, but there's not as much opportunity for things, or to look for things that are cheaper. You know what I'm saying. There's just, the bigger city offers a little bit more, but that also includes crime. So that's why I moved out here in the first place, was to get away from that crime. But now we've kind of moved up in the world to where we've got. When I moved out here, we had less than 12 murders a year. We're already doubled that now. We were at a rate of 2 a month already. And it's still, that was in July, the last figures that were released. So, you know, that's already 14 months with 4 months left to go in the year. And it's sad, but it's because of the budget cuts, and just like I was going to mention about the fires, where I live here is 2 miles east, give or take, of Garden of the Gods Park. A lot of industry and homes and not a lot of wooded area in between me and there. Last year, when we had that fire come into the park, I was on the secondary list of people to be evacuated. Why? Because of the embers from the fire. But those people that did get burned out, they were living in places that had just been built, or within the last 10 years had been built, kind of thing. And, you know, it's them encroaching on the wilderness, not the wilderness encroaching on them. So it makes a good case for not building in places like that, unless you're willing to pay the price and do the work. A lot of these people, we had one guy who did his fire mitigation, Bob, and it was awesome. The fire went entirely around his property. I mean, it was like a solid line. It was the way it was described to me. Just went all the way around his property because he'd chosen to do the mitigation. And, of course, the people that didn't paid the price for it. But these people, you know, and with my situation, I've got to be in a place that has a lot of public transportation.
Well, sure, yeah.
These people moving out in the wilderness, they got nothing. You know, something happens to them out there in the middle of nowhere where they're cut off. There's nothing. And it's that wilderness. I mean, that wild, that remote. And, you know, so it's, when you talk about mountains being removed and weather coming in because of it, it's the same thing with this fire. I seriously doubt if 100 years ago, the same type of fire, except for the same reason, would have done near as much damage, not just in terms of home, but I'm talking about the amount of property burned, because that's, you know, like I say, that's just a natural part of the forest thriving, is periodically it does a little mitigation of its own. So, and when we don't do that, and we encroach on their lands, we add more fuel to those fires, and you get a fire like what we had last year, which was fairly unprecedented for the way it actually came into the city.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was just, and of course, now we're having the flooding because of the fires, because of the burn scars. And this is all stuff, Bob, that I never could have ever foreseen. I could see some flooding from time to time there on Highway 24, right there by Pike's Peak, because of the way it's located in that. But we're talking about flooding chest high, where people were stranded in their cars, a couple people got killed, because of the burn scar and the fact that there was nothing there in terms of vegetation to prevent this water from coming down there. And so you've spawned all these secondary things. When you were listing the list of calamities, but we've got all of them except the hurricanes, and if a hurricane came in the right way, we'd get the weather from that too. You know, so we're and I think we're going to have a bad winter. Right now it's 86 outside, but at night you kind of feel it changing.
Yeah, just little hints, hints.
Yeah, I can't see if the leaves are turning, but the smell. You know how that smell is of fall in the air.
Oh yeah, it's almost unidentifiable, but you know it's there. See, I need a little bit of advice from our buddies up in Wisconsin. You know, do I bring a light jacket? I don't know. I mean, it was really, really nice last year, and it didn't seem particular. I'm hoping not. But.
Well, wasn't it the time before that you went out there, though? You didn't bring a light jacket and ended up getting caught with the weather out here and the in this part of the Midwest, West, I'd bring a light jacket, because here at night, even though we're still getting up to 80-something in the day, it got down into the high 40s a couple of nights ago, you know, about five nights ago. And if it didn't dip into the high 40s, it's been regularly getting into the low 50s. So, you know, when I was driving, except for July and the first part of August, I always carried a safety kit, you know, in case I got stuck in weather. Because out here, that can happen. The year Diana died, it snowed here. That was August 27th of 97. It didn't stick on the ground, but it was snowing like crazy when I got up that morning. And, you know, if it can snow on August 27th, imagine what it could do in mid-September when the weather's a little bit cooler.
Well, just remember, it was just last year when, you know, when Sandy... Superstorm Sandy hit, you know, you have to say it with the reverb, and it was a horror. But when Sandy hit the northeast coast, we got 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
And that was October, and just weird.
Yep. What part of the month was that in?
It was 4 months to the day after the derecho. It was late October.
Okay. We usually get snow on Halloween. I mean, that's kind of a bellwether for us. Doesn't happen every year, but more often than not it does, and we didn't get it last year. I think that's kind of one of those unscientific methods to tell you what kind of winter you're going to be in. If you get snow on Halloween, you might add a few logs to the
bundle up
there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
Well, I've been noticing things a little bit more lately, because with Ferg back in the public school system, I've been getting up in the morning to take him to school maybe if I'm spoiled, you need to tell me, or somebody needs to tell me. Or if I'm overprotective or whatever, he has to get up at 5. Now, bear in mind, we live 8 miles from the school. Yep. He has to get up at 5 to be ready to get on the bus at 6, and he has to ride the bus for an hour and 15 minutes to get to school.
Yep.
Whereas he can sleep till 6, and if I get up and take him, it's a 10-minute car ride.
When I was in high school, same thing. I lived about 15 minutes away from school, but because of the bus route, I had to be at the bus stop at 6, and then we took an hour ride to school. And when I started driving, you know, when my dad finally relented and gave me the truck, that stopped rather quickly, you know. But... I wouldn't tell Ferd this, but I made an art out of waking up at 15 minutes to 6 and being at the bus stop at 6 o'clock. So,
no, we will not tell him that.
But, yeah, because, yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't think you're overprotective. That 1 hour, unless he can make some really good constructive time out of that hour on the bus. And I remember when I was doing that, it just was too hard to study on a bus that's rattling, bumping, kids getting on, you know, that kind of thing. So I never saw any good out of taking an hour bus ride, other than I'd sleep most of the ride. But as far as study, you know, it was just impossible to do it. So... How about your younger? Does she go to the same school? Or?
No, she goes to a different one. She has a different bus ride.
Yeah, that's... this is his senior year, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's too bad you couldn't have got him at the same school, but...
Well, that's a long story, but no, I know what you mean. Kevin, have yourself a wonderful evening, and hopefully we will talk again soon.
Yes, sir, Bob, and, you know, what was said earlier about we better go for the night, but we still got September to go. You know, it's an ongoing kind of thing, and I'm hoping to make a donation, if not the 1st of September or the end of August, shortly thereafter, because I'm really thinking that PayPal thing. I noticed they have a thing on there now where you can do a recurring donation.
Yeah, they do, and it works. You know, we had a lot of problems with it for the longest time, but it works just fine, and we've got several people who do the recurring contribution, and it really, really helps.
I'm giving thought to doing that. Some smaller amount, but in a recurring form. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're done with it. You don't have to worry about it. That kind of thing. So I just, you know, if you like the show, give. If you don't like the show, give. That's kind of the thing. It's free speech.
Yeah, hey, George Soros, over here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, that's one of my goals that's been expressed by others in the Horn family. If I ever win the lottery, you know, then the Horn's problems and Molly's show problems are going to be resolved. But until that happens, you know, we've got to do it the old-fashioned way, because corporatocracy does not become us. So
that's the understatement of the evening, Kevin.
Yep.
Yeah, the day that I break it, you know, hey, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to take a break, Kevin. You just stand by for a minute. We'll be right back. Let's run some Buy Gold Now ads. No.
Yep. Well, you could probably at least do the Buy Gold ads better than Glenn Beck.
Yeah, who, by the way, Isaac pointed out to me, was the fifth highest paid entertainer last year, Glenn the Beckerhead, at $90 million.
Oh, my God. Very sad, but I think most people, even some that listen to him, realize that he's way out there. He's not even in the same stadium anymore, much less being in left field. So,
no, nor are the people who are his ideological pals. I got this story here about Rand Paul. You remember Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who says that food stamps are the new slavery. Really?
Yeah, I've got two pieces of paper on mail right now, and I'm afraid it's to cut said food stamps. And if that's the new slavery, well, I'll take what I can get, because when you make $1K a month, approximately, and you get $52 a month in food stamps, and talk about cutting it, you know, there's not a whole lot you can buy on with $52 anyway. And these people talk. You know, they make a big deal talking about the welfare queens and the people abusing the system. But the real reality is for these patriotic people who beat their chest about patriotism, I'm one of millions of disabled American veterans who are going to get their food stamps cut because they refuse to do anything about the sequester. And it's all because of the black man in the White House. If the black man in the White House wasn't black, I doubt we'd be here. But they're doing everything they can to stop anything good that he would do. And, of course, anything that we disagree with what he does, you don't hear them saying a word about that. So it really annoys me when I hear one of these people get up and start preaching about patriotism and You know, I just usually tweet him back and say, look, disabled American veteran, and did my 4 years, paid for it in more ways than one, and you can't give me $10 more in food stamps a month, and you're talking about cutting it, take your patriotism and, you know, stick it somewhere else, because it rings kind of hollow with me when you don't take care of the veterans and when you don't take care of the people that are working for a minimum wage, and they're working. It's not like they're on food stamps because they're out of work. These are working people on food stamps. And, you know, to slander them like they've been slandered over the past few months, you know, just is not right. And that's, again, why we need shows like yours, because you, Rick Smith, Malloy, and a few others are the only ones that are pointing out these things. And so I'll leave you with that, and just a general reminder to those that can give, and to those that can't, you still have, like me, you have a voice.
So. Indeed. Hey, Kevin, before you go, I got a question in from Isaac. He wants to know what program you use to be able to access Twitter, you know, given your disability.
And the software itself is called Guide, and I think it's version 7 I'm using now. I was able to access it with version 6, and there's another software program called JAWS that I believe will do Twitter, too. I've been really happy with the Guide as far as Twitter. As far as Skype, I've had my problems there, but as far as Twitter, it could be better. I wish that it allowed me to do things just as easily as a sighted person, but at least allows me to access it. So, you know, if you know someone that has vision problems that would like to be on Twitter, I'd recommend Guide for a number of reasons, especially if they haven't had any other accessible software in the past. But it does allow me to access Twitter, and pretty easily compared to what JAWS would do.
Well, Isaac said thank you, so I know he appreciates it.
Well, feel free to give him my email address, Bob, because, you know, trying to tweet information out on Twitter, you only get 140 characters. So if you do have any questions, Isaac, feel free to email me, and, you know, I can send you information or whatever.
So. Okay, good deal. Well, thanks, Kevin.
All right, Bob, and good evening to you and the Horn family once again.
All right, you take care. Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Yeah, that software is called Guide. And onward on the phone lines. We've got lines open if you want to jump in. 304-658-3333 is the number. And the Skype line is also open. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
Well, I'm still laughing at my own bad joke, you know.
Me too.
I've kind of run out of. I was thinking about a lot of things when you guys were talking because you brought up a whole lot of things. But I've kind of actually tonight for me, I've run out of things to say. I was, of course, we talk about the transport in this country and how we get around in this country today, and I just wonder. I worked for a company for a while. Well, the owner was a guy who gave out. John Birch Society books, you know. That was pretty bad as it was. But his brother was an engineer for one of the big car plants. And he was working on a turbine back in the 1960s that would run on anything, Bob. I mean, you could put perfume in it and it would run. And the thing suddenly disappeared. I never heard what happened to it. Because this guy brought it, he actually brought an example of it into the company where I was working. And it was a big bus of some kind, but it was running on a turbine engine. And his contention was that he could run it on almost any kind of thing that would burn, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody else ever heard of it or not. There was, now, come on, it was a while ago, but I wasn't drinking in those days. You know, I was 18, 19. Well, I was working there when Kennedy was killed, so I was actually, 63? I was 20 years old when the president was killed. My mother called me from home, and I just got through with lunch, and within minutes, you couldn't get through on any line at all. And I can still remember sitting down on Sunday reading my morning paper, you know, the typical person of that age, sports section here in November, you know. Although I think Paul Brown was gone. And I kind of gave up on the team after they fired that guy. He was a lot of things, but he certainly was way ahead of the rest of the NFL coaches. I mean, come on, when you go to the division title from 50 through 55 and then come back again in 57, of course, he had drafted Jim Brown by that time, which didn't hurt, you know? Except for that guy from your state.
Oh, you mean Sam?
Yeah, that guy. I mean that guy that I hated so much.
Yeah, I think Jim still hates Sam Huff.
Well, Jim was a character. I was lucky enough. I had a guy from the Catholic Big Brothers, and he took me down to when they used to work out in those days at a place called League Park in the heart of the Huff area in Cleveland. And League Park was a baseball park where my mother at age, let's see, she would have been 12, my granddad would take the family down to see the 1920 world champion Cleveland Indians. That's the first time and only one of two times they've won a World Series. And so I went down and I had met Paul in 54 when he came to this wonderful Catholic children's village that I was living in. The place where I almost condemned myself to hell by punching a nun in the face. Well, why not? She was punching me in the face. I mean, come on. I was only 11, and, you know, what the hell? I was a lot younger than her. I mean, Bob, literally, I was measuring them. She was wearing those rimless glasses, and I'm measuring with the left hand, you know? Because when you lived in a place like that, that's one of the first things you learn. The hell with the yardstick or a ruler. You use the extent of your left jab to measure how far something was, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
And it was pretty... how I ever survived all that stuff, I'll never know. And it started out by being a straight-A student in a school, in an inner-city school, and they wanted me to take major work classes, and my mother said, no, he's not. Because in those days, he took the municipal bus system, the transit system. You didn't ride any special bus. And I was, at that point, 8 years old. My mother didn't think that at age eight, jumping on, you know, on a Cleveland transit system, which they called it in those days, bus, and riding to school by yourself was a hip thing to do, you know, or a good thing to do.
Oh, it's a big deal.
Yeah. That's what led me into 4 years in this Catholic children's home. So I got a chance to go down there, and I had met Paul in 54 when he came out to this Parmid place with the Graham and Lavelli and Groza and Maurice Bassett. Now, that's a big thrill when you're 11 years old and your baseball team had just dropped a series in four straight to the Giants. Did you ever see any films of the catch that Willie Mays made?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Is that something?
That dead run over the shoulder thing?
Oh, my God, was it a gift to be... In so many ways, there was a gift to be able to, watch Ted Williams on TV. Who was getting up there, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tuned in a game in 52 and watched Bob Feller pitch his third no-hitter. It was against Detroit because my mom was such a fan. I actually watched the last Indians team, but I was 5 years old. There was a lot of good-looking women standing in front of me, which would have been a lot more interesting in about 10 years, you know. But that's just the way life is. Get out of my way. I'm trying to see these baseball players who I couldn't tell one from another, you know, at age five. What the hell could I tell? Yeah, to me, have you been to Toronto?
No, I have not. I've never been to Canada.
I went up there a lot to a joint near Peterborough called Rice Lake, named Rice Lake. Good, some of the biggest damn bluegill I ever saw in my life. The rest of it was pretty poor. I shipped it over in later years. I shipped it to New York State, the big lake up near Buffalo, near Jamestown, New York, and I can't think of the name of it. I'm getting senile, I'm telling you. I must have taken a trip to Egypt and seen the damn river and don't even know it, you know? What can I tell you? Chautauqua. Chautauqua was much better. You fish it all, Bob?
I've been known to, yes.
Yeah, I had a trip scheduled for...
I always wanted to be a fly fisherman, but no, sorry.
Yeah, I just picked up a book by a guy who was a folk singer when I knew him in Cleveland. He was based in Lake County, and he was studying philosophy. And his name is, I believe, John Gearock is his name. And I just picked up a book on CD that he wrote on fly fishing. Because when I knew him, he was working on his master's when I last saw him at Ohio State in philosophy. And, you know, I made a few bad jokes about it, his office with, you know, three philosophers, no waiting, you know, life explained, you know, that kind of stuff was just natural for me to jump on. But he's the next thing you know, I'm walking through a mall in Lake County about 15 years ago, and there's a book with his name on it. I look at the back page, and I said, God bless it. And I've actually talked to him once since then, caught up with the guy across country, you know, luckily. But the thing I was getting about Toronto is the transit system up there still uses tons of streetcars. In fact, are you familiar with the fact that some kid pulled a knife up there, ordered everybody off the trolley, and, well, he was a little maybe off of his, too, but, and the cops came up and they killed him. And that was a real controversial thing in Canada. Because this sounds more like one of our major cities, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Because those guys up there, they were always nice to me. One time I was in Niagara Falls, and because I used to go to fish and rice, and I'd stop in Toronto because there was an excellent Hungarian restaurant, and ethnic restaurants when we were raised in Cleveland are like gold. There were so many of the best Eastern Europeans, and
yeah, and that's something you don't get so much of. One of the I have yet to have the funds to take a run at it, but there's a Balkan restaurant in the Barracks Row area of D.C. that I'm just itching to try.
Give it a shot, because they're that cook and that.
Well, the problem though, Bill, is that's easier said than paid.
Oh yeah, in your situation, yeah, because you're up there trying to do one hell of a lot of good. And you don't have a hell of a lot of dough. Your budget calls for the fact that McDonald's is too expensive. Nothing like that.
Yeah, nothing like it. Well, you know, when the dirty water dog on the sidewalk in D.C. is $5, you know you're.
Yeah. Oh God.
Hey, Isaac wants to know something here, and it has nothing to do with Santa Claus, Bill.
Okay, good.
He says, "Ask Bill if he was able to get his ATM back today from his aid worker. We were talking about it this morning."
Yeah, I can't talk about that right now.
Isaac does that.
That's another subject that fires my butt from here to hell are these health aides and what they have to put up with. You know what they did here in Ohio? There's a ton of these two-bit companies where somebody with money hires an RN to head it up, you know, so the person with the qualifications. And they hire these women. Mostly women. There's a few guys that'll do it. I mean, I had one guy, health aide, came in and tried to sell me football pool tickets. Gee whiz, buddy. If I hadn't learned better than that when I was 15, you know.
Yeah, no, what? No tip boards?
No, exactly.
Hey, I also got a note in here from Ron and Raleigh about the turbine car.
Yeah.
And he sent me the link to the Wikipedia page for the Chrysler turbine car. And, you know, what a fascinating thing. First of all, the idea of any engine that does 44,500 RPMs.
Yeah. That I remember that it was, you know, a high turnover.
Yeah, and they verify that, yeah, this car could run on diesel fuel, unleaded gasoline, kerosene, JP4 jet fuel, vegetable oil, and it was at one point tested by the president of Mexico who ran the car on tequila.
Oh, my. You can always drain a little out of a tank and get yourself going at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, well, it depends on the tequila. I mean, I can't think of a better use for, like, Cuervo. I know our buddy Bart Kopp despises Cuervo, and it was through reading him that I began to pay more attention to those sorts of things, and that stuff's awful.
Well, Bob, what I drank, when you're a blues musician, you know what you're expected to drink by the young kids in the audience, and I'm not talking about the people who were doing it before I ever started. God bless the people.
Well, what, I mean, what, whiskey or?
Gin.
Gin. See, that was my next guess.
Tanqueray, you know, and I only drank once a week. And that was one thing people said, that's why your vision went to hell. I said, no. If I had drank that much, my vision would have improved twice over.
I see everything twice.
Yeah, exactly. That was why our friend in Colorado, listening to what he's doing, my vision is not quite wiped out yet, but it ain't getting any better, put it that way, you know. Well, hell, it hit me at 58 or 9. It was the same year as the that horror scene in New York City where two passenger planes... Bob, can you tell me if I ask you what happened to the U.S. Air Force that day? How come they were on stand down?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I have to worry about, because now I start talking like somebody...
Well, no, there's audio out there of the discussion. I remember years ago when I was still on terrestrial radio running a bunch of it on air. Some of them weren't stood down. They were sent out to sea, way the hell out to sea, you know, like due east from D.C. out to sea.
And you know who gave them the order that day?
Mm-mm.
The vice president, from what I've heard.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And
Because George was busy reading a book upside down, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, and remember, Bob, I grew up listening to adults talk about Pearl Harbor and how FDR knew all about it. And he just let it happen as a way to get us into war. You know, this was a way, you knew the Japanese were coming and you let them come. How come the aircraft carriers weren't at Pearl?
Yeah, that's another one of those right-wing myths that's pumped out there, and it's... because it somehow proves the perfidy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who...
Oh, yes.
Right.
Of course, we know what he... They say I was talking to one of my doctor's office people having an argument about something, and as I mentioned being... that FDR was president and I was born. Now, that makes me feel old. But it's not that old, really, because he was... How many... If I had been born in 32, yeah, but I mean, he was still... He had just been elected... In 40, yeah. And then he was elected when I was about a year old or so for the fourth term. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, there's things that have happened that we still question. But I'm glad, who found that thing on that turbine?
Oh, that was Ron in Raleigh. He's a car buff, and he still holds this evening's record. He's the one that got the question started. He holds the record for driving the oldest car in the Horn family right now. He's got a VW Coronado that's 24 years old and still going.
Yeah. Well, I bought it.
And those Coronados were hot little numbers, too.
I bought a 66 in the 90s, a bug, but it had been, you know, I had buddies that were bug freaks. And one of my friends, the guy who recorded that album with my face on it, you know, the one that I stole more album covers to... Target Rangers than I did records.
Yeah,
that one, yeah. This guy ran a Volkswagen shop that ran the... He just ran a two-channel Sony. He told me he was looking for a Sun sound with that. A primitive sound. And he got it, all right. It was pretty dirty sounding. Yeah, and I'd go over his shop at night, and there'd be all these guys working on it. There was a book... A Volkswagen repair guide that came out in some kind of a white book, a white cover thing. It was for idiots or for complete idiots or something.
Yeah, you know, you're the second person who's mentioned that book to me. A buddy of mine over in another county drove a Volkswagen for years and had that book.
Yeah, because this guy made it completely simple to work on, and You would have worked on V8s. Pardon me, I'm going to choke to death. Ron, I wanted to be the engineer that I knew. I don't know if I should mention his name or not, the guy that brought it to this office I worked in. His last name was Huebner. He was supposedly the engineer in charge of the development of that. And if Ron could slip a quick thing on what happened to it, who pulled it off the market and why? To me, it sounds like it's something they'd want to get off the market because it runs on too many cheaper things than they controlled. And it sounds like paranoia after a while. But
well, that turbo engine, that turbine engine, not turbo, turbine. And by the way, I just screwed up a minute ago. No, what Ron has is a VW Corrado, not Coronado.
Oh, Corrado. That's, to me, the only thing I had...
That thing would blow the doors off of a Porsche.
Wow.
In its heyday, off of the 911.
Well, you designed the bug, don't you?
Sure.
Porsche himself.
Yeah.
Because I don't know whatever happened to it. The guy dragged one into the office where I worked one day, and he got a good look at it. Of course, nobody wrote in it, but to me, there's always been this theory running around in people's minds that these guys want to control the mileage available in a car whenever possible, and there's all stories about people buying up the miracle carburetors. Now, I don't go that far.
Oh, yeah, the 100-mile-an-hour carb?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I started hearing that story when I was about 10.
Yeah, that was about...
But the fascinating thing about that Chrysler turbine engine is that they were still fooling around with it all the way up to 1977 when Chrysler started... when they had their first big financial crisis,
and they had to borrow the money to stay in business,
right? And as a condition of the government loan guarantees, they had to promise to abandon the engine. However, later on, they had a defense industry subsidiary that was later sold to General Dynamics, and it was that gas turbine or a modified version of that gas turbine engine that wound up in the Abrams tank.
Because I don't know much about.
But you know that engine. Whereas an ordinary engine has ordinary internal combustion engine has about 300 moving parts. There's 60 in that gas turbine.
Well, that makes a big difference, doesn't it? When you're fighting your way through desert dust and. I guess the Abrams. Well, of course, Creighton Abrams. He took over from Westmoreland, didn't he, in Vietnam? And he had been an armored commander in World War II, as so many guys were. And the I'll sneak a word in about the Sherman tank. It was so bad. The Sherman had a real high profile. Have you ever seen one?
Yes, I have. There are several of them at old National Guard armories here in the valley.
They had an Allison engine in it, which is, I believe, an aircraft engine originally. And that's why the ass end of that tank stood up in the air, according to people who know more about them than I do, who write books about them. And they were so bad that the guys fighting in them in World War II had a nickname for it. They called it the Ronson.
Yeah, because it went up like a lighter?
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, Ron and Raleigh just wrote back in for you, Bill. The name of the book was Volkswagen for the Complete C-O-M-P-L-E-A-T Idiot.
Yeah, that's...
And it was written by John Muir.
Muir, a guy from California, put it out. It was very hippie looking, and the front page was drawn, hand drawn, and very influenced by a guy whose last name was like if you crumbled up bread, you know.
Yeah.
That's what the front drawing was kind of like. The first thing the guy told you when you got in your car, you know, you turn the key, start the engine, then you hand roll a cigarette and smoke it. And give that engine time to warm up, the air-cooled engine. You didn't want to take that out as cold as you would. But see, when I was living out in Lake County, on my truck that I drove a camper from Usick, a truck-mounted camper, because you could load the equipment in it, and you had a stove, four-burner stove. Hell, I'd make a fresh pot of coffee with one of those Revere-ware drip coffee makers, the kind that you had to pour the water through.
Sure.
And you didn't plug it into anything. I don't think I could find a regular drip coffee maker if I ransomed my...
Did you ever see the places our conversations go, Bill.
Did
you ever see one of those glass vacuum coffee pots?
Yes, my mother had one. I've seen one in my life, and I'd love to get another.
I love those things.
Have you seen the price on those things?
Starbucks was hustling one about 10 years ago that was way out of my league.
It was about something. The one I saw on the Internet was like $80 or something like that. I don't know where my mother picked up this thing. But she broke it eventually. You know how glass coffee pots are. You eventually bump it against something, and you're holding the handle, you know.
Right.
Yeah. What do they call those things, Bob? Do you remember?
I thought the vacuum, isn't it? It's a vacuum pot.
Yeah, they worked, and I thought they were French in origin.
No, that's the French press.
Yeah, the French press is another one. You're right. Yeah. Now, I don't know what the hell they call those vacuum. I saw them on the Internet a few years ago. I have real problems with using the Internet anymore. I don't know what it is. It's probably me, you know. Not as... That's why our buddy in Colorado, I got to hand it to him. He's got a lot of guts and a lot of knowledge to be able to work with the computer, because his vision, I think, is worse than mine. Like, I amaze people. They say, well, I hear you legally blind. And they watch me walk around the apartment without falling over stuff. I said, it's different. I said, what happens is you lose, with me, you lose the center section of the eye, which is long distance and reading.
Yeah.
I forget what the term is. You try to find somebody, try to find a doctor that'll talk to you about anything except how much you owe them.
Yeah, God forbid you should try to sit down with Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, right?
I'd like to sit down with him, and I'd like to be able to pull a short barrel 38 and see if I can shoot it.
Nah. You don't get to say that, Bill.
I know. I'm kidding, of course. With my vision, I'm liable to shoot my own kneecap off. Who am I kidding? You know, that's not a smart thing to do either. But, yeah. I mean, or a pie in the face would look good on him. I'm sorry. Let's put it that way. Let's go back to some...
Right, because eating food is slavery. What a yahoo. Yeah.
That guy is...
I mean, I get all Bugs Bunny over that. You know, what a maroon.
Yeah, you got that right. That's, boy, the old Bugs talk. Mel Blanc was something else, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a genius. The only guy who's come close in terms of just really high-quality cartoon voices are a couple of those guys working over at Adult Swim. The guy who did the brain for Pinky and the Brain, and the guy who does the voice of Master Shake and Granny Kyler on Squidbillies, and this may be just totally foreign to you, Bill.
It is.
But hilarious voices.
Well, I hunt the AM section of the radio. I've got a good radio that'll haul from long distances at night when the weather conditions change. And that's how I first listened to the station out of Nashville. Was it WLAC?
Yeah, and...
Was that Memphis or Nashville?
That's Nashville, I think.
Okay, that was, Ernie's Record Mart and Randy's Record Mart, and you heard each one of them did 3 hours of blues in the 50s. One night I'm dialing around and I hear this voice coming out of nowhere singing a thing called Lonely Avenue, with the Raylettes behind him, and then from there on in, the race was on, man.
Yeah, it was all over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that adds rhythm and blues, and blues just add it. I mean, I like New Orleans jazz. I love those old guys that played in New Orleans, and I met a few of them accidentally, some bar in Cleveland. I started bringing them up, and like I was 18, and I heard guys from New Orleans, Keith Sheik and people like that, who I never would have. And you know, I never went there in my adult life, and it kills me now. I should have.
Mm-hmm.
Because I loved... I had a record on Atlantic called Jazz Begins, was the title. And it was a brass band recorded in 1959. Atlantic sent down their master recording man. I don't know if you remember his name. I can't. But he was a master of recording bands. He worked for that label.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about, because, you know, Atlantic was deeply involved in the Muscle Shoals music scene down in Alabama, too.
Yeah, well, that's when I tell people, well, I told you that the slide guitar on Aretha's The Weight, that was Duane Allman. Because these guys were, I mean, there was so much happening. I said, there's a movie coming out about the title, I Was Born in Chicago, which was one of the first things I ever learned from Paul Butterfield. And Butterfield, Bloomfield, and a whole bunch of guys that lived in that city who fell in love with blues, and they were going down and I've seen pictures of them sitting with Muddy Waters in a bar in, you know, the early 1960s. As they were, well, just like if you went to hear King Oliver in Chicago in 1920 with a young man who had just come up from New Orleans, whose first name was Lewis.
Yeah, that young Armstrong chap.
Yes. And in the corner, you'd see a guy named Benjamin Goodman. A young guy was
paying very close attention.
Yeah, listening, because Johnny Dobbs, who played clarinet for Oliver, and he also played on Armstrong's Hot 5 and Hot 7, he was a monster player in that era, you know, and that stuff got me, and I don't give a damn. I couldn't master that instrument if I beat it to death, but because it's too tough, it's too hard. But the switch to harmonica was a piece of cake. Because the other thing had worked my ear over to a point where the simpler instrument, my ear was sharp. And, well, my singing was flat, unfortunately, but that's, you know. Yeah, it was just a lucky time to be around. And things were happening, and now it bothers me because I said I just reread Grapes of Wrath, and it's like, what the hell are people thinking of? And, you know, they don't, that's not a required reading anymore, you know that.
Oh, no, yeah, it's probably deemed subversive. Hey, you just got fan mail in from Juanita in Ohio. She said, please tell Bill he could always pull Rand Paul's wig off.
Yeah.
Is that a rug? You look at it, and it kind of looks ruggy, doesn't it?
Yeah. It looks pretty bad.
Jim wants to know if you ever heard Lil Johnson sing, Put a Little Sugar in My Bowl.
Yes. I've heard a few of the female singers in the 20s and 30s were fine singers, and a lot of time they didn't print, you know, they didn't print on the record who the backup band was, but it was guys like Louis Armstrong and various and sundry traditional jazz players playing fine behind them. And that was, as I say, that some guys started bringing these guys up to a bar on Carnegie Avenue in Cleveland in the early 60s, and I was lucky enough to walk over and see them. And then in 65, a girl who I knew was going to a place called Lake Erie College, or as we used to call it, Lake College for Erie Women, you know. That was a
kid. He's got a million of them. He'll be here all week.
He'll pull them out of, like, faster than you can hear them. And this girl, I had loaned her this first Paul Butterfield album from 65, and she came back with it and said, hey, these guys are coming to Lake Erie College. And I went to see him. It was October of 65, and I stood about 3 or 4 feet from Michael Bloomfield all night with my, you know, just going nuts. And I worked a little later on in 70, I worked with the drummer from that band, a fellow named Sam Lay, who was a veteran of playing with Muddy and Howlin' Wolf. And that was the great part about that band, because it was two older guys with a complexion that was darker than the other four young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys held those guys together, too. Their ability was really helped those young kids, and that was a powerhouse. If you can find that first album with a song, the lead song was titled Born in Chicago, written by a Greek kid from Chicago, Nick Gravanitis or Gravanites. I mean, those guys have never really got the recognition that they were getting at that time. We were pushing to get Butter into the Rock Hall of Fame, but it's not going to happen, you know. You know what the Rock Hall of Fame is now? How many records did you sell?
Well, right, and then, you know, there's that other political aspect of it, that there are some people who will never be admitted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because certain people just don't like them.
Yeah, that does happen. We've seen it happen with baseball players, like a guy 1919 White Sox.
See, now Isaac's doing it again on Twitter here, Bill. He's playing inside baseball with me. He says, Bill and his ATMs at Lake Erie College, LOL.
Well, the woman that turned me on to that was a beautiful young 23-year-old woman from of Scandinavian descent who also did modeling for clothing fashion place in Lake County. And she used to ride around with me at lunchtime, and she had these funny, I don't know who rolled these cigarettes for, but they made you feel funny after you smoked them, you know. That was a long
time. Yeah, you smoked those right down to the nub, didn't you?
Yes. Well, how many people, I'm the second generation. My dad got popped with a pound of this stuff in 46. But his brother, my uncle...
But the Benevolent and Protective Society?
Yeah,
kinda...
he worked. My uncle worked for them, and the die was cast, so to speak. This cost you this much money, and, you know, I mean, I know that there's no such thing as official bribery, is there?
We wouldn't have a government if there wasn't.
You got it. Well, I've talked long and loud enough, and maybe somebody else can sneak in here and say something, but I appreciated the callers tonight. Both had something to say, and I always appreciate it when...
You know, that's the neat thing, Bill. Everybody's always got something to say.
Yeah.
But the trick about it is to allow enough time to lapse to let people get into their rhythm and their groove. Because if you don't get behind the microphone and babble every day of your life, then it's kind of a weird experience.
Yeah, I'm so used to it. I used to talk shows around here in Cleveland. We had a few guys that were good. Now the people they have, as I say, that guy last night who was talking about the slave trade. Well, the slave trade was outlawed, blah, blah, blah. But, hey, yeah, okay, the slave trade was outlawed, but if you had enough people here and you could use these folks to breed for you, you didn't need to go buy anybody from overseas anymore. And this idiot completely neglected to mention that fact.
I don't think it was neglect, Bill.
Oh, it was on purpose. Because if a guy is that stupid... Then what the hell is he doing with the microphone in his freaking hand? Come on, let's tell as much of the story as you need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes back to my favorite people, the woman who talked about Appomattox, and come on, you get paid to do this? Come on, I mean, I'm a dummy, I know Appomattox when I hear.
I will never forget. I don't think for a very long time, Bill. The night that multimillionaire for-profit media broadcaster Anderson Cooper, looking fabulous, on the streets of New Orleans, on the streets of New Orleans after Katrina. Oh, maybe it wasn't Katrina. No, it was the first Mardi Gras, I think, after Katrina. And there was some noise going on in the background. I'm kind of vamping here and setting it up because it's still so damn funny to me. Anderson Cooper looks earnestly at the camera and says, "I'll have to talk a little louder now. Please pardon the Calliope music in the background."
Oh, Calliope. Isn't that something you put, you cut open like a watermelon?
I think so, or else you have to go get one of those loading doses of penicillin for it.
Yeah,
Or maybe Steve King thinks that Mexicans have calves like Calliopes. I don't know.
Well, yeah, Calliope was an interesting... A friend of mine sent me a recording by a guy. It was a train thing. Go Bum Again had a chorus like that. Was a 1930s piece from the Depression era, and a guy had a calliope working with him on it. I don't know where he found a guy who had one and could play it, but it was an interesting piece of music using that. What was that? Was that steam operated? Or...
Yeah, that's steam driven.
Yeah, I thought
because it was most it's a keyboard. But it's steam driven, or it was in its early days because it became famous on the riverboats.
Yeah.
And steam from the boilers would be diverted to the Calliope. Oh my God.
Man, I was.
But language things like that just drive me nuts, Bill. And I try to grab every possible teachable moment I can when I'm talking to Ferg. I was driving back from picking him up at school the other day, and I was listening to. Inside Appalachia Today. No, we were coming back from Cumberland, Maryland. That's what it was. Inside Appalachia. And they were doing this story about the 150th anniversary of the Battle of Droop Mountain, which is where the Union kind of finally put paid to Confederate ambitions in West Virginia during the recent unpleasantness.
Yes.
And the reporter of the story said, and I'm going to try to get this as close as possible, because she was talking about the movement of the armies. And she said, let me think here. She said, the trail, what was it? They moved on a trail through the valley built by the army. Okay? They moved on a trail through the valley built by the army.
Well, I didn't know the army could build a valley.
Well, nor did I. See, you got you right there. And when I heard that, I looked at Ferg and said, "Throw me down the stairs, my hat."
They paid this guy to say that, or this announcer.
Well, no, she was a reporter, and she had written her story that way, and you know, it's just. And it goes back to something Dr. John talks about, the death of the editor in journalism.
Yes.
Because otherwise it was a pretty informative little package. But, you know, a competent user of words who was trained to look for that kind of stuff would have seen that and said, no, they moved on a trail built by the army through the valley.
Through the valley, yes.
But there's no editors. So they moved on a trail through the valley built by the army.
You see, Bob, my education took a beating because I was living in a housing project, and I basically got tired of fighting with every bully in the neighborhood because I was carrying a piece of cutlery that when you flipped your wrist, the blade opened out of it. It didn't have a push button. Those were illegal.
Oh, no. I know exactly what you're talking
about. And, hell, it just got to a point where if you did beat the guy they sent up against you, three or four of them would jump on you and finish out what he screwed up. So you couldn't win with these people. And I saw some of them in later years, and they were complete losers, you know, because that's no way to grow up. Some of them got into crime that they thought was organized and found out it really wasn't too well organized and ended up behind bars, you know, you lose. But it was no way to grow up, and it drove me out of school ahead of time. I went and took the equivalency test, and the best grade, I finished in the upper 10% in reading and comprehension.
Well, Bill, I think it may not look that way from where you stand, but I think you got the better end of the bargain. I mean, you talk about people making stupid decisions. On our way back from Cumberland, Maryland, and the wonderful screening of The Last Mountain that I was invited to attend there, and we had a wonderful conversation afterwards. But on the way back the next morning, we drive back through, and that's a beautiful part there. And there's that one little neck of Maryland where, you know, if you take one step, you're in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, so we stopped for lunch in Morgantown. At this little Middle Eastern buffet that I go way back with. I was sitting there thinking at the time that it was 28 years.
One of those positive things about immigration, yes.
Yeah, right. I was thinking, you know, it was 28 years ago this summer, I had my first ever plate of hummus, you know, with the warm pita bread and the Kalamata olive in the center. And so I took Ferg to the Middle Eastern buffet, and we feasted on kifta, and marinated and vegetables and that lovely saffron rice and gyro with the tzatziki sauce. Oh my God, it was so good. And anyway, so I stepped out, you know, everybody knows I've got this nicotine problem, and I stepped out onto the sidewalk in Morgantown to alleviate it, and along comes this guy with a video camera and wants me to do a man on the street interview. And I did it, and I checked it out, and I watched it, and it is what it is. And the question was about whether or not we should raise the minimum wage, and probably get a pretty good idea how I responded.
Yeah.
So I made it into the package, and I watched it, and then you know how it is on a TV station website, they've got a list of all their current stories. And for some reason or another, I clicked on a link that said, students arrested for starting fire. And lo and behold, it was a couple of boys from here that we all know. I mean, you know, my son and daughter played Little League baseball with them. And these geniuses up in Morgantown. Now, Morgantown, West Virginia, has this tradition, and it arose after I was there. I don't know what its genesis is. It's pretty damn dumb. But on big Mountaineer football victories, and sometimes with basketball, the students take old couches out into the street and set fire to them.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of a good collegiate thing. It's, you know.
But it became a problem because, I mean, these kids at WVU pretty much went pro. So here it is. It's not even football season yet, Bill. And these two Nijinskys from down here, I don't know. I mean, you know, you've got your August football practice, and maybe you've got to have your August couch burning practice.
Maybe
these two yahoos take couches, bags of garbage, and old mattresses, and stuff them in a dumpster, douse it with gasoline, and set it on fire.
Holy crow! I just hope there wasn't some guy with a bottle of Thunderbird in his pocket sleeping in.
Well, you know, you worry about that kind of thing.
Might have been me at some point. Who knows?
So I showed it to Agnes, and she's like, no. And I showed it to Ferg, and he's like, well, I'm not surprised. But, it sent me running off, you know, setting the Wayback Machine for 1983 in Morgantown. And we did stupid stuff, and they usually involved like 45 kegs at a time and 2,000 people in the fraternity house.
Yeah.
But that's about as crazy as it got.
You didn't burn the place down while you were in it.
Right. I mean, it's kind of dumb. But no, I mean, those same guys you're talking about, you know, these kids here, what are you thinking?
Well, I was caught at a all-night restaurant when about 2 in the morning by 4 or 5 guys that didn't like my appearance, and so I just flicked my wrist and said, let's do it here, or you want to go behind the place? And they didn't want to do anything more. And every time I saw them from there on in, they were really polite to me. And damn, Bob, I hate that stuff. But I'll be damned. You know, 4 years in the Catholic children's home where you fought like the religious version of Lord of the Flies, you know, where you were constantly, somebody was always leaning on somebody else because the good sisters were busy praying and nobody was watching anybody. And I saw a few things there that I hope I know. There was one kid who was obviously in trouble. He'd back up in a corner and bite himself in the hand. The nun would throw holy water on him. It's like, God almighty. I don't know how I survived some of that crap. Maybe that's why I've been a little nuts myself in a lot of ways. But we are what we see, you know?
Yeah.
And you've seen plenty yourself. And, I've been through West Virginia a lot because we would run down to... I think it was Winston-Salem, yeah. And there was a used car dealer down there that we would buy nice, clean, non-rusted body cars. And I had that big GMC, and I'd take the camper off it and throw an aluminum cap on it. And I had a trailer hitch for the boat, of course, and change the hitch ball to a 2-inch so you could haul a car behind you. And we'd bring them up here. My buddy was a painter. He'd clean them up real good inside and out, and we'd make $1,000 per car. You know, it's the old American hustle. It was a thing they used to call the underground economy.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody...
That's exactly what it was. Hey, Bill, I got to roll out of here, but it's been a great conversation.
Good deal.
You have a good night.
I hate to grab the line for too long, but enjoy.
No, you did a great job. We'll talk later.
All right.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. It is time to get out of here. It's about a minute and a half before the top of the hour. Thanks, everybody, for helping us meet our fundraising goal for the evening. That means that tomorrow is just the usual $150, and hopefully we can do that. Indeed. Thanks very, very much. It's the only reason this remains on the air. Thanks also always go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And hey, here comes Rick Smith on the horn.